Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
What the hell are you guys doing? Don't tell me you all quit playing World of Warcraft 2. Dude, we're done. We're sick of getting killed all the time. Guys, when things look bad, you can't just give up on the World of Warcraft. We don't have a choice, dude. That guy killed our characters 14 times. I have a solution, you guys. That guy can kill us so easily because he's a super high level, right? But if we were super high level, too, we can't get to a higher level because that dude doesn't let us finish quests. That's why we need to just log in and stay in the forest, killing boars. Boars? There's lots of computer-generated boars in Warcraft that die with just one blow. Dude, boars are only worth 2 experience points apiece. Do you know how many we would have to kill to get up 30 levels?
Yes. 65,340,285. Which should take us 7 weeks, 5 days, 13 hours, and 20 minutes, giving ourselves 3 hours a night to sleep. What do you say, guys? You can just hang outside in the sun all day tossing a ball around. Or you can sit at your computer and do something that matters.
Today, I come to you with a vision. A vision not only of exploiting my high office for personal gain, but of a shining island country where the common man is king. Where people will no longer live under the jackboot of a dictatorial madman who makes you adhere to his every whim. I think I'll call it Duckmania, and whoever doesn't like it will die an ugly and painful death! In my first 100 days, I pledge to wipe out the annoyances that blight your pitiful existence. And so I present to you my contract with Duckmania. An end to car alarms that talk, to supermarket carts with jiggly wheels, and to people who put cute messages on their answering machine. And to music videos which feature the band instead of sweaty half-naked girls. To really hairy guys in public swimming pools. Furthermore, Duckman outlaws all babies in movie theaters. And Duckman outlaws all people who refer to themselves in the third person. Possession of a leaf blower? Unconstitutional. Fat women wearing spandex? 5 to 10, no parole. And public exhibition of an Adam Sandler movie? Lethal injection.
The Lord came to Noah one afternoon. There will be a flood and it will happen real soon. Build the big enough for all, yourself, your family, one pair each of animals. 2 by 2, 4 by 4, obey instructions given by the Lord. Go unto the ark where you'll be safe. As soon as they got in there, it began to rain. The appointed day had come, and they were all shut in. The people that had left now were knocking to get in. But it was now too late. The Lord had sealed the door. Any chance they might have had now was gone forevermore. 2 by 2, 4 by 4, obey given by the Lord. Go on to the ark where you'll be safe. As soon as they gone in there, it began to rain. 2 by 2, 4 by 4, obeying instructions given by the Lord. Go into the ark where you'll be safe. As soon as they had gone in there, it began to rain. As soon as they had gone in there, it began to rain.
Good to laugh. All right. Why, hello, it is 32 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused on this Friday. From high atop the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things, people, and ideas. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We are here in the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. My name is Rick Emerson. I will be your host for today, seating on the left. Don Taylor across the table from me, preparing news for the people. Isn't that right, Don?
I am indeed.
Excellent. All right. If you'd like to engage with us telephonically today, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of the program with your observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, your recipes, your haiku, your limerick, the thought processes that plague your mind day and night and for which you previously had no outlet, you can now bring those to the figurative table. Here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program, so that you might think easier and breathe more freely as a human being, reveling in all the experiences that make up your life. If you want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed. It is Don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Text box on the website open. And Skype as well. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's all one word. That is our username. Skype at Rick Emerson Show. It's the Skype username. All right. Let's see, what else do we have? So Taser Watch coming up today. Also, Clown Watch, I think, just added to the agenda. Mr. Big Jim Willig is going to be here with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Today we'll be talking about the life and work of Ms. Roseanne Barr, so that's coming up later on. Also, here's the thing that he sent yesterday. It was yesterday, 2 days ago. He sent us, back up for a second, on Monday, I think it was. So Jim sent us a photo of this, of some new porn film they got in at the adult establishment where he works. And it's a satire of Tron, but of course it was called Prawn, which is awesome. And it's a thing that I wish that I had thought of. And it really is to my undying shame and horror that it never occurred to me. So he sent it to me, and I was like, that's fantastic! I wish I'd thought of that, but that's excellent. Like, it doesn't even matter what the content of the film are. It really is just, that is a thing where the guy's job was done as soon as he came up with the name, and as soon as they had the cover art fashioned, it was like he could just go home and just revel in the idea of a job well done. But he sent us then as a follow-up, like, 7 or 8 audio cuts from the Tron Prawn, the satire film. So he sent us a bunch of sounds that I've resisted the urge to play them. They've just been sort of sitting in sort of an aural escrow, waiting to be played. So we'll do that later on today. So we got the Humor Me Comedy 101, as well as these cuts from the Tron porn film. So we got that, plus the top five that I think I had originally scheduled for Monday, and then it was just sort of got bumped by things throughout the week. So we'll do that today. That is the top five songs that I was obliged to perform as part of my parents' country and western band.
Country and western?
Exactly, Don. It was a musical ensemble that covered both ends of that spectrum. So we'll get to that later on today, the top five songs that I was obliged, is sort of a light way to put it, that I was, there was really no choice. It was not an optional thing. So we'll get to that later on today, that top five. Plus, Don Taylor's track and the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Well, Michael Lohan is worried about his daughter. 17 state attorneys general sent a letter to Pabst saying they don't think they should sell Snoop Dogg juice to kids.
When they say Snoop Dogg juice, we're talking about this is an adult malt beverage,
right.
Yes?
Okay. Right.
Snoop Dogg juice sounds like something else.
And Taco Bell may have like gotten people to back off on saying they have fake meat, but now they're all petulant about it.
Okay. So we got all that coming up. So Clown Watch, Big Jim Willig, Taser Watch, Top 5, Lohan News, which, by the way, it means that I get to play the Michael and Lindsay Lohan song.
Yay!
And those headlines and so forth. So you want to be part of the program today, you can do it via email. That is Rick or Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. You can text box on the website, or you can go to Skype, and you can message us at Rick Emerson Show. That is our username there, plus the phone lines are open, et cetera, so on and so forth. Today is Friday, which means that yesterday was Thursday, which means that just two Thursdays from yesterday, the signing for Zombie Economics, which is going to be that's going to be happening at the Barnes & Noble at Lloyd Center. That is Thursday, May 12th, 7 p.m. So that is 2 weeks from yesterday. That is Thursday, May 12th, happening at 7 p.m. So we'll have details on the website about that here in the immediate future.
That is just skidding towards us like a school bus of children on an icy road.
It's really not.
Is it?
I mean, sure, maybe over there on your side of the table, yeah, but I mean, who knows what's going
on
in your head today? What's going on? Let me ask you this about the inside of your head. What does it look like in there today? Because as somebody said, by the way, in all caps, and this is not a person who's typically given to all caps exclamations via the website, as somebody said at the end of Legion of News, they sort of blurted onto the screen with all caps and many exclamation marks. They said, oh God, she's finally cracking up. This is about like an 12:57 or so. What's up with you today?
It feels a little messy in here today, inside my head.
In Dononia,
yes. But there's some dust bunnies rolling around and some bats flapping. But other than that,
it feels like there are bats flapping
a little bit,
and dust bunnies.
Right.
It seems like those would come from different places, sort of emotionally and attitudinally.
Well, you know how in old movies, sometimes somebody inherits a house and it's like this beautiful old mansion, but then they open the door and it hasn't been cleaned for a long time, and they pull a sheet off of a couch and there's just dust everywhere and things are kind of, and then a bird goes, you know.
That was a really good bird sound you did right there.
Thank you. It's a little bit like that in my head today.
Okay. And so the dust bunnies are what? What do they represent?
Just they're getting in the way of me getting to the ideas and the words and the things that I need to be witty and sharp.
Okay, so it's not that you don't feel edgy as such. It's that you feel as though your thoughts are perhaps encased in some sort of jello and they're difficult to get to.
A little bit like that.
You can see them, but you can't quite find them.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Things are just kind of jumbled.
All right.
Today.
And the bats are what?
Well, the bats are a more benign version of what I've always thought of as the Fraidy cats that I get in my head.
I realize that I picked the wrong day for you to explain what any of these things mean, since by definition, you probably are just this close to being able to find those thoughts and phrases and toss them out, but you can't.
I do have this thing that happens in my head sometimes when I get really, really overly anxious about things and scared and worried. And
now, what are you worried about?
Well, no, that's the thing. I'm talking about something
okay,
else right
this
now.
This is not that.
These are the Fraidy cats.
Okay.
And then those are the Fraidy cats. And then I sort of feel like I have these sort of gloomy, angry little black cats cluttering up my head. And they are like fears. They're the fears. And my first husband, we used to have this ritual we would do where he would take his finger and he would pretend to be drilling a hole in my forehead. And then he would put his lips on my forehead and he would suck the Fraidy cats out.
Wow.
and then I would ask him to make sure he plugged the hole back up so that they didn't get back in.
Okay.
But anyway, this is a little bit, the bats are kind of like that, only they're not fear. They're just sort of chaos.
You're really allaying everybody's fears, by the way, that you've just completely lost it today. First message. Yep, she's lost it. Completely bonkers. Okay, all right. I really wasn't equipped with any, I didn't have any sort of crazy music ready here. I'll have to find something. Okay. Well, thanks for clearing that up.
I ran out of the pills that the doctor gave me that keep me from, like,
all right,
itching,
now it all comes
itching
out.
When I get too much caffeine,
uh-huh.
And which helped me sleep. And so I have not been sleeping well, if when at all. And I'm feeling a little bit crazy.
Just, okay.
a little bit nuts from the lack of sleep.
Okay. I'm just curious. I only ask because, you know, I asked this question earlier. You said, well, you know, I'm not really rested as such, and I've had a lot of caffeine. There was no mention of any pills running out. Now it all is making a stronger kind of sense.
I'm just sort of scratching my wrist. It's that thing.
Oh, I see it.
From having too much caffeine and not...
No. Tell me more about the bats and the sucking out of your brain.
I'm sure you know sometimes in your head things get a little messy and kind of disorganized and stuff seems like things are just put in the wrong place.
Okay.
You go to search for something and it's not there.
It's just that I've been looking for an opportunity to use the Killer Clowns from Outer Space soundtrack, really. So, such as... All right. Have we already done the headlines? Did we do that a few moments ago?
We did do
that. It's all become just so hazy and amorphous here. All right. You know what would work even better? Hold on a second. I'm just rifling through my soundtrack collection here to find Dawn Crazy music. wait a minute. Here's the thing that might work. Let me see here. Where did I put this? It's Friday, so things are a little piled up throughout the week. Let's see.
I think I need to not use the 5-hour energy drink stuff.
What do you mean, is that the 5-hour, the little bottle, the 5-hour energy stuff?
Yeah.
When you say, let's stop for a second. When you say that you ran out of the pills that the doctor gives you that stop you from itching when what happens? They stop you from itching when?
Just when I get anxious and I get itchy from being anxious and also sometimes from too much caffeine.
Okay, so is that an actual, literal physical itching, or is it an itching of the soul?
Yeah, no, it's an actual physical itching. You can see that.
You have to have pills to keep you from itching when you have caffeine?
If I have too much caffeine, sometimes, yeah. And also...
Have you thought about not having too much caffeine?
No.
I mean, I know that that's an easier solution, so I don't want to get in the way of things.
Well, the thing is, when I take the pills at night, if I take one pill at night and it helps me to sleep, then I don't get the anxious, too much caffeine itchiness during the day either. That doesn't happen at all. So, and it's very common for people when they get stressed out or...
Go ahead. No.
Stressed out or keyed up or anxious to be itchy. That's not just a me thing, and it's not a crazy thing. That happens to people all the time. So they gave me this pill so I don't just scratch myself obsessively and rip off hunks of my flesh by just scratching.
So you're out of the pills, and so you decided logically the best thing to do was to have a 5-hour energy drink, which is, in fact, I think, loaded with caffeine.
But I haven't been sleeping, and I was so tired, and I didn't want to be, sluggish and stupid. So I thought maybe it would make me perky and alert and able to be, on the ball for the big show.
You know, we had a discussion, actually. In fact, I know it was a Friday. It was, I think, two Fridays ago, a discussion with Jim Willig about 5-hour energy drinks as regards some of the, homeopathic remedies that have been put on the market for impotence and how they're filled with niacin.
Yeah.
And niacin, which just floods your all of your cells and your blood vessels and whatever with blood. It just increases blood flow. And that one of the manifestations of a lot of niacin intake is, in fact, a warming and a redness and an itchiness of the skin.
Yeah, I think, yes. I think that's actually, that's occurring a little bit.
Okay. Several times that I also
feel very warm, which I think is something that happens when you have too many B vitamins in your system as well.
Okay. This explains why during Legion of News I looked over and you were constantly scratching yourself.
Yes, I have this one spot right here on my wrist, right there.
Oh, I see it.
It keeps itching.
I don't see it. Uh-huh. All right. This is I wish everybody could have seen this at around 12:58. I learned you actually just at one point just pulled your headphones off and you were just going, there's hair all over my face!
I had hair in my mouth!
And you're just kind of doing this sort of a... kind of just hitting yourself.
I was trying to find the hair and pull it out of my mouth.
Okay.
That was a real thing. It was not imaginary hair.
Oh, no, of course not. We all see the hair.
It wasn't like the bats or the Frady cats. It was an actual real hair.
Okay. Excellent. That's going to be a swell day. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program here at RickEmersonShow.com. Thank you for joining us today. So, yeah. So there'll be more of that later on, I imagine. Plus, Jim Willig takes a watch, top five, clown watch, and all of that. So, hey, speaking of craziness, and I'm not saying that this guy is crazy, but I do want to read this email that it's not so much crazy, it is just sort of unnerving. Let's see what I've got here. This is from listener Mike. And so, listener Mike, I was going to forward this to Thomas Gill. I probably still will, because he's a guy who seems to, you know, he knows a lot about how things operate. So I got this email from listener Mike. The subject line of this email is, help me, I don't know who can answer this question. So this is a legitimately unnerving email. I mean, not an unnerving email for me, but I mean, I can see why he would be unnerved by this. He says, Rick, I didn't know who else to ask about this. My iPhone rang with an unknown caller earlier today. So his phone rang, he looked down, didn't see who the caller was. It was just, you know, it said like blocked or unavailable or whatever. It says, my iPhone rang with an unknown caller today. When I answered, no one was there, and I heard three beeps followed by the sound of my phone snapping a picture. Do you know what this is? Because I'm kind of freaked out. Sorry to be so brief, I'm emailing you from work. Best show ever, Mike in Tillamook. And so here's what I don't understand about this, and I got to email him back and ask him for some clarification. When he says, my phone rang with an unknown caller. When I answered, nobody was there, and I heard three beeps followed by the sound of my phone snapping a picture. I'm unclear about whether the beeps he heard, in other words, did he hear them down the phone line? Did he hear the beeps happening on the other end of the connection, followed by the snapping sound on the other end of the connection, or did all of the noises come from his phone? He heard nobody there, but then the beeping and the camera snapping came from his own iPhone. I'm assuming that they came from his iPhone. That it was just, you know, some sort of the phone rang from whoever, and then it was the the beeping was all, you know, it was all from his own. Now Thomas Gillis, of course, messaged back and said that it might have been an Apple test call. As were there any photos on the camera phone? Otherwise, it might have just been done to screw with him. So that would be the question I would ask. Is I would go and I would look in the camera roll. I would look in the roll of photographs, Mike. So that's on the main screen where you hit the photos button, and then there's the camera roll. Wow. And it'll tell you all of the photographs that have been taken with the camera. And just see if that's a, if there's been any photographs added to that. So, in any event, yeah.
I've never heard of that happening, and that doesn't, wow.
Yeah, no, so I don't really have any answers to that, but the best thing that we can... the best thing that we can tell is you want to check your camera roll to see if it's taken any photographs, and then if it hasn't, that I guess it could be just some sort of a weird coincidence. I mean, if you answer the phone and it's like, I don't know, and you, because I did that thing of accidentally taking a photo. That day that I thought I took a photograph of my penis, because I was in the bathroom and I was like answering the phone or I was checking my voicemail or something, and I didn't know. That the way you do a screen capture on an iPhone is to click the button on the top and to click the home key at the same time. And so I was just scrolling through, I was doing whatever, and I held it in just the right way that it went chink, and it took a photograph, and I was like, oh my God, a photograph of my junk. How does that happen? And it turned out that it was just, you know, that I had just taken a screen capture. So maybe it was that, you know, maybe when you were checking to see who had called, you might have held the phone in exactly the right way that you inadvertently took a photograph of something. That would be my guess. I just don't know. Apparently, it says Apple sometimes does this if you call with an issue. Oh, this is okay, so this makes a lot of sense. Thomas says, Apple sometimes does this if you call them with a problem. They call back. This is interesting. This is the sort of thing that if you were some nutcase privacy guy or Al Franken, you would then be weirded out by. He says, they call back and they trigger a picture to make sure that everything is working, to make sure that the phone is operating properly. Or it seems like they could also trigger a picture to get a capture of the screen so that they could actually see what was happening on the screen. So they like how if you call Microsoft sometimes, if you call Redmond with a customer support issue, you know, like a tech issue, they'll do that thing. They ask your permission first, but they'll do that thing of taking remote control of your computer where suddenly the mouse is just working by itself. And the guy at like Microsoft headquarters in Redmond is just prowling around in your computer looking for whatever might be causing the issue. So there you go, Mike. So that seems like it's probably it. If you called Apple, if you had some sort of an issue, or if you filed any sort of a tech support ticket or whatever, they may actually have just called your phone and then taken a photograph just to make sure that everything is working properly.
It would freak you out, though, if you didn't know what they were doing.
If you didn't know what it was, if you were not expecting that, that's the sort of thing that might deeply unnerve you. So there you go. All right. So, we'll look into it. If we hear... Yeah. By the way, it can also take a screenshot of the phone to make sure the phone itself is working. Likely Apple misdialed. So I guess the most logical explanation here, sort of Velma style, is that Apple probably was attempting to call somebody for tech support purposes. And then to take a screen capture of the phone to make sure that everything's working or to diagnose the problem, they probably misdialed and got a different iPhone than the one that they were expecting to get. seems like that is the most likely solution to your quandary of the most likely answer to your question, what was going on here. So I'm just speculating. All right, so there you go. Done and done. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. That's 503-505-6964. Before we do anything else, before we do the Taser Watch, before we do the Top 5, before we do the Clown Watch, before Big Jim Willie joins us, there's a thing that I've had written down in my show notes here, my show matrix, which I create every day. And I've had it written for like 3 days because every day something else has bumped it off the front page of the program, as it were. And that is that on Tuesday, I think, you said you had, quote, a discussion item you wanted to ask about.
I do. Actually, if you'd hand me that off the printer, I printed this out.
All right.
I received an email. This is from Timeshift Matt in Seattle. Who said, I've had a movie-related question for a while now. I wonder if would make for a brief discussion on your show. Remember how it used to almost always be that in the movies, the lady that was longing for love was always after the rich guy or the royal guy? Things went that way all the way up to the 80s. Not only was the guy both rich and attractive, but had a heart of gold as well. Then it seems to me at some point in relative recent cinematic history, things changed. No longer are women longing for the wealthy men, and in fact, those men are often portrayed as snobs, joyless, or as the antagonists. I can't pinpoint a dividing line, but it almost seems like the shift happened around the time Titanic came out.
The dividing line is Pretty in Pink, because in Pretty in Pink, he is not only rich, but he also ends up being a decent guy. And yet we're supposed to kind of hate him because he's not what's-his-name.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's the actual dividing line, but I would say that that is a place where the two sides merged, because he had the traits and the attributes that we now associate with being villainous, but then he also was revealed to be a good guy.
Because he does say that now the common working man seems to be the ideal. When or why do you think the change took place? Reality checks? Did it ebb and flow with the economy? The rich being resented during harder times? Escapist fantasy no longer involved being whisked away as a princess?
I don't know. I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm saying I don't necessarily agree with the premise that early on in movie history or earlier in movie history that it was that rich folk were automatically good and poor folks were bad. I don't know. I mean, I'm not really the person to ask in terms of like romantic movies or romantic comedy, certainly, but I'm not really certain that earlier in film, I'd have to hear some examples, I think, because I can't really think of a movie offhand where the woman was saying, you know, where the poor guy was sort of was the wrong choice and the rich guy was the correct choice.
Yeah.
I mean, can you? I don't know that that's a thing that actually was the case. I mean, I'm running through the sort of the great romances that I've seen, or the romantic comedies that I'm familiar with, and I think I would have to hear an example given of a movie where a woman was supposed to be attracted to the rich guy because he was somehow portrayed as better.
Yeah,
I don't know. Well, I mean, what do you? Because you. So anyway, so you've had like this for a couple of days. You've been wanting to talk about it. So what is your take on it?
Well, I don't know. Because I keep thinking about it, and I. Because you're right. I'm looking back, and I'm. I really don't know. I'm kind of baffled by the question because I understand what he's saying. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it's actually true, or if it's just some sort of perception we have, because yeah, in some way you think the ideal was always. I look back at like the old sort of like Doris Day comedies, where Doris Day was like the working woman, and she'd fall, you know, for the super rich guy, but he was like a bastard. But then it turned out he actually was a really nice guy who, you know, he was a womanizer. He's usually often played by Rock Hudson, but he turned out to actually be a fine guy. But he was also like incredibly, incredibly rich. But and then later, you know, more common movies, you know, tend to be things, you know, like there's this Reese Witherspoon movie where she's like engaged to Patrick Dempsey and he's rich, but he turns out to be kind of a jerk. And then she ends up dumping him for Matthew McConaughey, who's like sexy and like working class or something.
This was a maid of honor.
Something Alabama.
Oh, Sweet Home Alabama.
Horrible movie, by the way. I had to review it. But I don't know.
I think that what happened, I mean, at least my assessment of American film, is that it's it was often the case that the rich guy seemed to be, he seemed to be a villain or he seemed to be a bad guy, but then was revealed to have a heart of gold. But what's missing from that, in my estimation, is that is the second half of the second half of the equation, that that the poor guy or the guy of, you know, the working class guy, the guy of moderate means, ended up in fact being the wrong choice. So in other words, I think that there was never a face-off between the two guys. The dilemma in movies past, like in the 50s and 60s, was just that the rich guy, she thought he was a jerk and he turned out to be nice. He was never in competition with another guy. It was just a question of whether or not he, in fact, was a good person. I think the idea of having the face-off between the poor guy and the rich guy for the affections of the leading lady, that may be a more recent development. So I think that maybe the whole struggle was simply on about the nature of the rich guy. There was never a poor guy in contention for her heart. Yeah. I think it's the actual class the class envy, class struggle part of it. Maybe that may be the more recent development. That would be my take on it.
Okay.
And we're done. All right. At the news desk here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A Los Angeles judge could decide today if actress Lindsay Lohan will have to stand trial for allegedly stealing a necklace worth $2,500. Her father, Michael Lohan, says a tape showing his daughter leaving the store wearing the necklace without paying doesn't give the whole picture.
This is Lohan 1.
This is a video. It's not an audio. You don't know what they're talking about, but you do see Lindsay for a number of minutes, I believe over 7 minutes, before she leaves the store with the necklace on, talking to the owner.
Lohan says the case has been blown out of proportion.
From the very beginning, I said this shouldn't have even been a felony. It should have been a misdemeanor because the cost of the necklace is actually a lot less than what they estimated the price at $2,500.
And he also says the case is about the jewelry store promoting itself.
The company already sold the video, the surveillance video, for $35,000. They got the exposure out of it. And I think that the court system is going to see this, and I think the judge will be fair, and hopefully Lindsay will be exonerated.
So I've actually never seen the video. So is the deal that so is he claiming that she walked in? Well, I guess he's not claiming anything. Is that the man, the jewelry store, and the cops have claimed that she walked in, was walking around for a while, and then just walked out with the thing, or stuck it out, or put it on?
Yeah, and then she put it on, and then at some point she just left.
Because I thought the
which
idea,
I guess is I mean, how can they deny that she did that when one of her, like somebody who works for her or something, returned it to the store later?
I mean,
she had it.
I mean, well, she did have it, and she did leave with it. I guess maybe it sounds like his claim is that they were okay with that, or that it was strongly implied, like, no, Lindsay, take it for a take. If you don't like it in a week, you know, you can bring it back. That they sent her home with it, and it was, you know, for whatever reason, that they were fine with her walking out with it. And then it was returned later when it turned out that maybe there was some sort of a misunderstanding, but that it was a reasonable assumption on her part that she could just wear it home. And it's not like, I mean, look, it's not like jewelry isn't lent out in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels strange to be saying that Michael Lohan could be correct about something or to be defending Lindsay Lohan, because I always just assume that she's guilty of everything. But it is, I mean, was that that thing with Christina Hendricks where it's like they gave her like $9 million worth of diamonds or something to wear to the Emmys or the Oscars or whatever the hell it was. So, I mean, It's not like it would be outside the realm of possibility that she would be given jewelry to wear temporarily.
Speaking of Christina Hendricks, by the way, on Body of Proof this week, she guest starred, and her husband Jeffrey Arend is a regular on Body of Proof, and he's just like this very ordinary, dorky looking guy, and he just plays kind of a geek who works in the medical examiner's office. And I was watching Body of Proof with Patrick, and Patrick was like, "Ooh, Christina Hendricks." I said, "Yes, indeed." I said, "You know, that's Mr. Christina Hendricks right there. They're married." He said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Good for him."
Seriously. No, that's a good pull, as they say. That's really, that is really, I don't want to say marrying above your station, but I mean, really, that is, I think, probably doing better than most of the guys who went to high school with him would have anticipated.
Yeah.
I think if you were to go back and, in time to poll most of the people with whom he went to school and say, which of the guys in your class do you think will end up marrying her? My guess is, because I know what that guy looks like, probably no one would have selected him.
No, probably not.
Yeah. Well done, sir.
Yes. A Cincinnati motorist was simultaneously masturbating with a sex toy while watching a pornographic video when cops pulled her over last year has pleaded guilty to a drug charge stemming from the traffic stop. You may remember this story when Calandra Hamilton, 36, was arrested last August. She was now also hit with a drug paraphernalia charge after officers had found a broken piece of crack pipe in her purse. Police had stopped her because they believed the windows of her 2008 Pontiac were overly tinted. And according to the police report, when they approached her vehicle, they noticed her pants were unbuttoned and a sex toy was in her lap. Cops reported she advised that she had been using the vibrator while watching a video on the computer that her passenger was holding. Investigators did not further identify the video, although they said it was of the X-rated variety.
So we don't know the name of the video. We don't know, because that's a thing that, no. You know, that's one of those things where that's a little bit of promotion for, you know, Vivid or whoever. The idea that the video is, in fact, so intriguing, so erotic, so arousing, you can't even wait until you get home. It's like having a candy bar you need to open in the car.
In addition to having the crack pipe charge added to her other woes, she was also arrested yesterday on theft charges for allegedly swiping merchandise, including cleaning items, an air mattress, and a Blu-ray player from a Fairfax, Ohio Walmart.
Good
on
God.
Three separate occasions last month.
Okay. Well, that's just an unsettling and disturbing story.
Yes.
Here's Don Taylor. We'll do a few more. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side with Mr. Big Jim Willig.
Taco Bell has launched a pointed ad campaign asking, "Would it kill you to say you're sorry?" This new campaign comes on the heels of Tuesday's announcement that Beasley Allen has dropped the suit against the Mexican food giant, alleging their taco filling did not meet the minimum USDA qualifications to be called beef. Beasley Allen says the lawsuit was dropped because of changes in marketing and product disclosure by Taco Bell. Taco Bell claims they're not making any changes to their product or advertising, and that the suit was voluntarily dropped by Adam
Allen. Well done.
It's that discrepancy that Taco Bell is targeting with full-page ads, which read, "Would it kill you to say you're sorry? The law firm that brought false claims against our product quality and advertising integrity has voluntarily withdrawn their class action suit against Taco Bell. No changes to our product's ingredients, no changes to our advertising, no money exchanged, no settlement agreement, because we've, capital letters, always used 100% USDA inspected premium beef." And goes on to say, you know, they could have just asked us if we used real beef. They could have gone to our website where all our ingredients are done. And then says, we're surprised by the allegation, as were our customers. As for the lawyers who brought the suit, you got it wrong and you're probably feeling pretty bad right now. But you know what always helps? Saying to everyone, "I'm sorry."
Well done, Taco Bell. Seriously, huge. Because there was something really weird about the lawsuit from the very beginning when Taco Bell, you know, they said, "Well, look, our, you know, right now, if you get a taco or you get whatever, it's 88% beef." They said because there's water and there's, you know, there's some preservatives and there's, you know, whatever other agents are in there. But it's like the original claim was just something insane. It was like it's 29% beef.
Yeah.
Which just. But, of course, Taco Bell has to sort of hit back really hard, because that's one of those things where if you don't, the damage gets done, like, immediately. So good for them. Way to spike the ball and then call the guy's mama and tell him about it.
Exactly.
I mean, that is – I don't know who does their ad campaigns. I don't know who does their PR. I don't know what agency came up with that. But, I mean, that's a thing that ought to go in the front page of that ad agency's – like, if it's Ogilvy or somebody, that goes in the front page of your portfolio, like, today. Excellent. Well done. Rick Emerson, salute you. All right. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break.
You keep saying one more.
I think I said a few more.
Oh,
and now we're at one.
Okay. Let's do our Taser Watch.
All right. Here's your Taser Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Fantastic. Here's your Taser Watch for Friday.
A Polk County man died after police officers used a taser on him early Friday, an incident likely to reignite the debate about stun gun safety in Central Florida. Adam Spencer Johnson, 33, of Winter Haven, Florida, was behaving erratically in front of a theater at Universal City Walk about midnight. He was grabbing his beard, grabbing his head. He was being disorderly, said police spokeswoman Barbara Jones. The four off-duty police officers who were working Universal City Walk noticed his unusual behavior and contacted another officer to help restrain Johnson, but he resisted violently. Jones said they ended up tussling with him. After one officer used a stun gun on him, the officers handcuffed Johnson. He then became non-responsive. The officers started CPR and called a rescue crew. Johnson was pronounced dead at Dr. Phillips Hospital. Dr. Phillips Hospital.
Is that like it's Joe Albertson's supermarket?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a very good hospital at all.
No, it sounds like a Fisher-Price hospital.
Hello, everybody. The medical examiner will determine the cause of death. A Universal Studios spokesman declined to comment, referring questions to the police. The officers involved are on administrative leave.
In Florida. There you go.
Dr. Phillips Hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, that does, it does seem very much like a hospital that maybe doubles as a garage, you know, like for most of the day, you know, when he's not the, when he's busy treating somebody.
Which hospital are you going? Dr. Phillips Hospital? Yeah. It's right over there.
It's one of two things. That's either a hospital that exists in some weird Mayberry town, you know, where it's down the street from like Hank's Supermarket or something, or it's, you know, or it's just a place you probably, it's a place where maybe the cops take you if they really don't want you to get better.
The only thing that would have made this story better is if it happened at Disneyland instead of at Universal Studios.
Yeah. There's your Taser Watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Wait For It program. There we go. By the way, so listener John just sent me a great photograph of Christina Hendricks and her husband. Really, if I was this guy, I would be going to every single high school reunion in the country. I mean, not even beyond my own high school. I mean, I'd go to I would just make a tour of just nothing but reunions of schools that were near mine, schools that rejected me, you know, for admission when I was trying to go to college. It's that thing that we were talking about the other day of just calling people randomly at home. Hey, you don't know who I am, but my name is what is his first name?
Jeffrey.
My first, you know, just go, hey, I'm Jeffrey. I'm dating Christina Hendricks, and you are not.
Yeah, the amazing sort of thing about her too is that on the show she wasn't all, you know, madmened up. She was just, you know, she wasn't playing somebody from the 50s. Or 60s, she was playing a modern day lady, and she's just very dressed down and very, you know. And the thing is, it's just, you just look at her and you just go,
No, it's true. It's like, it's like when she plays, what's her name, Saffron or whatever her name is on Firefly, where, you know, where she's just, you know, I mean, she has makeup and everything on, but I mean, she's not, you know, wearing like huge heels. She's wearing, I think, like literally like a gunny sack, I think, that's been fashioned into a dress for part of the episode. And it isn't until later on where they actually have her in anything that, you know, that resembles normal clothing. But I mean, that doesn't, none of that really matters. So it is a little bit of a mind break when you go back and you watch Firefly, though, and you see her and she looks so drastically different from her Mad Men self in some ways, but still, I mean, as you said, it's just like legitimately beautiful. So, well done, Jeffrey. seriously, they ought to just, because he's, I mean, is he something other, I mean, is he just an actor or what? Like, what else does he do?
No, I think he's just an actor.
He's just an actor. And the thing is, he's not like a hideously ugly guy, but he's not like, you don't look at him and go like, you know.
No, he's very personable. He seems like a lovely fellow.
He's got a great personality. He's a sweet spirit inside.
Yeah, he's like, you know, I could see a lady liking him. It's not like he's some kind of weird troll. It's not like when.
No, he looks like the, you know what he looks like? He looks like the thinner Wachowski brother before he became a woman.
A little bit. Yeah.
Larry Wachowski.
Yeah. But there is that thing, though, that most of us, we do tend to end up with mates who are within a couple of rungs of us on the attractiveness ladder. You know, you generally can only successfully date one or two rungs above or below you. And they are, again, he's an attractive guy, but she is several rungs above, you know, most humans.
Well, that's what I was asking, if he was just, you know, if he was also like a producer or something, or if he had directed something at some point, because that's a thing that I think, you know, that sort of, it's like having a director credit or a producer credit or some sort of a production company. That's sort of like in Gauntlet, where maybe if you're, you know, if you're the Valkyrie and you don't really have a lot of armor, but you have a lot of speed, or you're the wizard and you have, you know, you don't have a lot of speed, but you have the magic power. It sort of balances out.
Well, who's the girl who was in American Pie and Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, the hot chick? She played the foreign exchange girl in American Pie.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about.
Yeah, she's married to a guy who's just like, you know, an electrician. He was just like a grip or something. And he actually had like a couple of lines in Jay and Silent Bob. And he was just like sort of, you know, this big, chunky, ordinary looking guy. He was just this schlub.
Well, see, also Kevin Smith and his wife.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the thing is, Kevin Smith, again, a director and somebody with some money and a little bit of clout. You could see, again, ladies often will overlook certain, you know, things in the looks department if the guy can get them into movies or buy them a very expensive house. But it's like, I just always, whatever this actress's name, I always admired the fact that her husband was just this totally, like, ordinary, schlubby-looking guy.
We should read this email, by the way, before we break. This is from Aaron in the O.C. or Jesus in the O.C. Subject line, normally you know me as Jesus in the O.C. And then he ends it tantalizingly with an ellipsis. The email the email itself says, ellipsis, but today and for the next 18 days, I shall be known as Jesus in Paris. He says, that's right, dude. I arrived in Paris this morning at 7 o'clock local time, which was 2200 West Coast time, or 10 p.m. If I recall correctly, alas, I cannot infuse the show with my bon mots as I brought my iPad and the chat box is flash-enabled, but I am able to listen. Not sure how often I'll be tuning in, though, since the show starts at around 2330 or 1130 p.m. here. And, well, I'm in Paris. Who the F wants to stay indoors when you're in a city with some of the most gobsmackingly hot women ever to walk the earth? Am I right? He says, and the stereotype is completely true, by the way. I haven't even been here for 24 hours, and already I've seen some smoking hot girls. I could die here and be totally fine with that. He says, you should get out more, Rick. There's a whole world out here. Actually, during flight four, during hour four of my turbulent flight to Paris, I thought, Christ, maybe Rick is onto something with this whole never leaving the couch thing. But hey, it was totally worth it. I mean, goddamn, the girls. So that is Jesus in the OC slash Paris sent from my iPad. So well done, sir. And he never, you know, he didn't give us any indication he was actually even going to be doing this. So,
and what with his anger and the often just typing things very angrily in all caps, I just always imagined that he was just one of those, you know, those housebound guys. But no, he's in Paris and we're here.
Also, he's crazy.
He is crazy, but apparently he's the kind of crazy that he gets to go to Paris.
Also, here's the thing about Aaron in the OC slash Jesus in the OC slash Jesus in Paris is that not only is he, and when I say crazy, I mean, I think he mentioned that having been locked up several times. You know, which, hey, who am I to judge?
I've got bats in my head.
Seriously. I mean, the tolerance that I have for that sort of thing is so high, I think, at this point, because, you know. So, doesn't matter to me. But he also mentioned sort of tantalizingly again, I think at least twice he has mentioned that he looks like Rosario Dawson. So that's a thing that I can't quite wrap my mind around. But so I think at some point, we'll have to meet at some point just so I can sort of assess what that's all about. Not unlike that photograph that somebody sent me the other day where they had morphed Barack Obama's face really, really well onto the body of like a smoking hot girl. And you were just sort of... And I just didn't know how to feel about it. It just filled me with the strangest mix of emotions.
That's unusual.
Because I was talking about Rosario Dawson during that sequence in the Clerks 2 where she's gyrating real slowly to ABC by the Jackson 5, which is, by the way, is not too dissimilar from that sequence. There's something where she's doing something very similar in He Got Game, the Spike Lee joint. And, I mean, she's just, like, mind-bendingly hot. So, and then he's like, you know, here's a fun fact. I look a lot like Rosario Dawson. And then he just sent a follow-up email saying, I'm not kidding. So I'm all weirded out by that.
On the other hand, somebody, we were talking about Iggy Pop the other day, and somebody decided to email me a photo of Iggy Pop's head photoshopped onto Lady Gaga's body,
which was something that
I didn't really
have. Have you seen
the
cover of her new album? It's really disturbing. It's where her body... It doesn't make any sense when I say it, but you have to look at it. It's where she's been morphed with a motorcycle.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. I have seen that.
It's very unsettling. I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I guess album covers are just weird sometimes, but it is a little... I had to actually close the browser window. It was like her eyes just followed me everywhere I went.
It's almost as if she's trying to challenge our preconceptions of celebrity.
I just think it's odd. I just think that's just one of those things where they had like an open competition to design the cover art. And then like that was like some guy, you know, like in 11th grade somewhere, just photoshopped that together and sent it in as like a lark. And they just picked it because it's creepy looking. And it really is, by the way. All right. Apparently, Shannon Elizabeth, that is her name.
That's her.
Shannon Elizabeth and Joe Reitman were married. Here's the thing. So they're no longer married. So I guess they've busted up. Guess who Joe Reitman, is that the guy you're talking about?
Yeah.
He's not related to Ivan and Jason Reitman.
I don't think so. I don't know.
All right. You know who he's engaged to now?
No.
Annie Duke. How bizarre is that? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with Annie Duke. I'm just saying that seems like a... That's you wouldn't imagine that the guy who hooks up with Shannon Elizabeth is also hooking up with Annie Duke. It seems like you're looking. Seems like that's two very different sets of criteria in terms of what you want in your your women. But you know, hey. You know, again, you know, it's a big world. Rick Emerson's not going to judge. We're going to take a little break here. We'll come back on the other side with Mr. Big Jim Willig. And this week's installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and work of Ms. Roseanne Barr. Also, we'll play a few cuts from this the Tron film. And we'll also have the Tron porn film. And we'll also have today's top five. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere, friends and neighbors.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. News Network.
Some things to do, some places we could.
listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. It's 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig, in the studio. So we got more details here about the question about the Apple thing. The guy's iPhone rang, and then there was the strange beeping on the other end and the whatnot. So somebody else said this similar thing happened to me. He said, I contacted Apple, and it turned out that it was something very close to what you were describing. There was a customer service call. They tried to call somebody else's iPhone. In this case, it was my former roommate. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but it was a misdial went to my phone instead of his. So that is probably what you probably don't need to lay awake at night in like a cold sweat. I mean, you can if you want. I mean, if you find that it makes you a more rounded person, but probably you don't need to.
If you're like me, you can't help it, and you're just going to anyway.
Just laying awake, just pawing at yourself. At small nanobots that only you can see.
Exactly.
Okay. This is all
off
true.
My face! Get off my face!
Okay. Fired a nickel for every time. All right. Thank you for joining us. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Where's my intro music for Mr. Big Jim Willig? There we go. Let's see. And... wait. There we go. Hello, Big Jim Willig. How are you?
Hello. How are we two?
We are, I think we're...
excellent. Better now that you're here.
That's darn tootin'.
We are rolling, brother. How's your week?
Not bad. I've been listening to a couple of the shows here and there. It sounds like you two have been at odds with one another this week.
Only one day.
The printer debacle.
Yeah.
And
what day was that?
The day with the printer cartridge.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. I just flushed this show out of my head the minute I'm done with it. Was that this week?
Yes.
I thought that was last week. Is that the day that Bruce was here?
I thought this was the beginning of this week. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's way over.
Well,
it was over by the time the show was over,
if it
frankly.
Makes you feel any better, I probably wasn't paying attention at the time it happened. So
I was on the bus, and I almost had to keep from saying out loud, Mommy and Daddy, stop fighting.
Yeah. I'll just sort of take your word for it that was this week. By the time the lunch rolls around, I can't even remember what I had for breakfast. So, I mean, the idea that I'm going to remember any particular show.
You live in the now, the
seriously.
Year.
By the way, speaking of living in the now, so I should mention living in the tonight. So that is about 5 hours from now, coming up later on this evening. That is Friday tonight, April 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Portland Art Museum. I should mention there's going to be a thing called Objectivity, which is a live game show that's going to be happening as one of their events, because Friday nights are free at the Portland Art Museum, and so they have a lot of just events and happenings and guests and speakers and interviews and lectures and stuff. So tonight they are doing something called Objectivity. It's a live game show featuring it's put together by our friend Mark Aceto, who is the Portland author and wordsmith and contributed to NPR. He did this whole thing about Strunk and White last year that was just awesome. He's been a guest on Outlook Portland a whole bunch of times. But it's going to be featuring myself, Peter Carlin, our friend Ryan White, Ms. Courtney Heimeister, who a lot of you guys know from Livewire or from the Court and Fatboy show. Mark Aceto, of course, Chelsea Kane. That is going to be happening tonight at 7 p.m. at the Portland Art Museum. It's 7 p.m. tonight, called Objectivity. There's no cost because Fridays are free, but you do want to get there early because they're expecting it to be pretty packed. So that is happening tonight, Friday the 22nd at the Portland Art Museum, Objectivity.
Are you going to wear a suit?
No. No, I don't want to overshadow Sam Adams. And that's
the
thing that I threaten to do all the time anyway.
It's kind of a fancy thing. I would think that you would you'd be wearing the suit.
Well, you might think that, but you'd be wrong. So I'm going to wear – I won't wear this shirt because it has a tombstone, and I won't wear my womb stretcher, the magnificent shirt. But other than that, it's going to be whatever I happen to grab out of the closet this evening. So they're just going to have to be okay with that.
Well, I think womb stretcher could be analyzed from an analytical standpoint.
It is itself a work of art.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, more than just the sum of its parts. You know, it's a closed mind that can't see the box, let alone outside it.
No, it's no. They're gonna get a dose of pure Rick. I mean, really, I don't want to. I don't want to.
Frankie says relax. T-shirt.
That's exactly what I'm gonna wear.
Wear your mysterious Turkish symbol shirt.
Oh, the one that has the star and the crescent.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, so that is happening tonight. There's a link. If you want to know more about that, there's a link at Rick Emerson or at Facebook.com/Rick Emerson. That is Facebook.com/Rick Emerson. Somebody asked, will it be recorded in any way for people who aren't able to come? No. No, you're going to be poorer for that the rest of your life, and you will live in a place of shadowy regret for all of your days.
Yeah, because if you're constantly looking backwards, I think it's the Music Man where in a great line is, if your day is filled with yesterdays, then your future's... I don't know, there's like this really deep line...
Are you singing a Roy Clark song over there?
Possibly, I might break it. No, there's a part where the Music Man's talking to the librarian, and he's talking about how like if your day is if your tomorrows are you know where you're hoping that the change will come, then your life will be like a bunch of empty yesterdays with nothing to really show for. It's really, I don't know.
No, go on.
See, it's not just me, is it? No.
I think you know what it is? It's the effing heat in here. I think there's something that
By the way,
I'm fine.
And have you noticed that he's got like this sort of road warrior thing going on with these.
You've got my cestus on both arms. I just noticed that.
Yeah,
hell is that about?
I went to the doctor today and I got diagnosed with mild carpal tunnel in both hands.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that and I've.
That's from switching back and forth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I am ambidextrous. No, I'm not ambidextrous. I am just I like to get a hold of myself every once in a while.
So wait a minute. So did you have symptoms? Or I mean, were you getting like the weird tingly thing in your hands? Or?
Well, the reason why I went to the doctor was I think I told you before about the cankle situation that had been developing. It was getting pretty bad, and like the right leg being quite swollen. I wanted to know what the story was. My hands also were becoming numb and my arms at random intervals. I was going to the gym and I'd be working out on the elliptical and I'd have to constantly be shaking my hands out because they would be going numb while I'm in the process of, you know, working out on the machine. So I wanted to know what it was, and he did a couple tests and he's just like, you've got mild carpal tunnel syndrome and he's like, do you use a computer at work? I'm like, yeah, but it's nothing really consistent. He's like, do you do any typing? I said, well, yeah, quite a lot, you know, just for comedy and blog based and stuff like that. So he kind of diagnosed me with mild carpal tunnel, and so
which
gave me these awesome cestus to wear.
And by the way, for anybody who you know, that's the thing that I think people are less inclined to make fun of now. But I mean, you know, like 5-10 years ago, you would tell somebody that you had repetitive motion syndrome, repetitive stress syndrome, or carpal tunnel, and people sort of rolled their eyes like it was not a real thing. I think people thought that carpal tunnel was sort of like it was sort of like ADHD, that it was a thing that people just sort of made up.
Yeah.
Because they just, you know, well, he just doesn't like, because he's, you know, your son's just a dick, you know, or you know, like
nature's way of saying
so and so just doesn't, he just is trying to find a way to get out of his job. Not that those cases don't exist, obviously, but I mean, carpal tunnel is a real thing, and I mean, it will F you. My mom had that, and they actually had to do the thing where they went in and they stripped out her tendons.
Oh, wow.
She had a carpal tunnel and tendonitis, and they had to replace it with, like, literally with, like, pig tendons. They put in, like, pig parts stitched into her wrist. I have a friend of mine who worked at Intel, and unsurprisingly, he had to sit there and just – he wasn't, like, on the line or something. He was just a guy who did coding for stuff. And he had – because here's the thing about typing and about repetitive motion and carpal tunnel is that when you're typing – not that I have like an ergonomic keyboard or whatever, I don't. But I'm fortunate that I've never had anything like that, because it's, especially if you're using like the return key, you're having to do this thing of tilt, of moving your hand laterally. You know, in other words, of moving your hand to the side, not up or down, but actually bending your hand sideways at the wrist, which is. It's not like it's unnatural, because your hand obviously will bend to the wrist, but you're not really designed to do it all that much.
Well,
and it just cinches things off after a while.
You look back, though, but like early man had to kill mammoth with rocks and sticks. And, you know, I don't think, like, you know, ugh, can't go on hunt today, ugh, carpal tunnel acting up.
Yeah, you know,
make splint out of saber-tooth bone.
But I think that you were having to do, I mean, I think that the muscles you were using, you know, again, obviously your hand does bend sideways, but I don't necessarily think that you were, that hunting or any of the other things we've had to do were like, you know, swinging a hammer. I mean, that's a thing where that puts pressure on your shoulder and on your rotator cuff and your whatever. Like little fine movements and your fine motor control, I think we use fine movements way, way more often than we used to. I think as manual labor has decreased in terms of its percentage of, you know, the jobs in the market, and white collar industries and the things that involve your keyboard skills have increased, your broad motor skills actually don't get nearly the workout that your fine motor skills do. And I think they get used far more often than they were meant to. It's like using that tire in the trunk of your car that's like from a Barbie car. Then it says, you know, not to drive over, don't drive over 20 miles an hour and for no greater distance than 300 feet on this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what some of your fine motor muscles and tendons are like. And it's like you're using them all the time now, and your body just wasn't designed to do that. Hmm. So this guy, and I'm not saying that it's going to end up as some sort of horrible deformity or whatever. I mean, a lot of times you can just, you know, if you just get... You know, if you just change the way you type or you use a different keyboard. A friend of mine actually, while he was having surgery on his wrist to fix his carpal tunnel, they actually outfitted him with a thing at Intel because, you know, he wanted to be able to continue to work. Where it was kind of awesome, actually, where instead of having a mouse or using the mouse or using the keyboard, they fitted him with this sort of like Rambo headband, but it had like a Duck Hunt, like a Nintendo gun light thing on the top of it. And so he would actually position the cursor or the mouse by moving his head. And then he had foot pedals like on a sewing machine for click and right click.
What?
And it was awesome. And I went out there and he was just sitting there, and he would like actually, if he needed to highlight something or if he needed to click something on the screen, he would just look at it basically. He would move his head. The cursor would go to, it was just like the Duck Hunt gun on Nintendo. The
Weird.
Cursor would go there, and he would use his right foot and he'd go click, just like a treadle on a sewing machine. And that's how he operated the computer.
I guess if you can make a drum kit for Def Leppard, you can kind of.
Seriously.
You can make a keyboard for someone without their hands.
Well, if you get any emails from me, you'll notice that the signature file on my emails always says this email was composed and sent using Dragon Dictate for the Mac.
Yeah.
And that's, because it's just a lot easier for me to talk than it is to type. And also because I, a couple years ago, started to get the thing where I got the tingly sensation in my hands. And that's never good, because that's either carpal tunnel or, like, you're Jeb Bartlett and you've got MS. So...
Well, the first time I ever had, like, what Jim's going through now, that was back when I was a chef. And I got out of culinary school, and I was doing my internship, and I was putting in, like, these nine-hour days just chopping and stirring and chopping and stirring and doing prep work in this kitchen, doing dessert prep stuff, making sauces and things like that. And I was working so hard and working so much physically harder than I had ever worked in my life, and literally had my hands up here doing things and grabbing things and doing this all day long. I'll go home at night and go to bed, and I would wake up every couple of hours, and whatever arm was underneath of me, because I sleep on my side, would just be completely dead. And I would have to roll over and like dangle it off the side of the bed and waggle it around, and then I'd go back to sleep and I'd wake up, and then the other arm would be dead.
Totally, yeah. That's...
And it was just hell.
And it is definitely very scary. I mean, like, kind of like the combination of all these things, I was just imagining that since I had stopped all my vices, that now because my body was trying to heal itself from all those years of being poisoned and toxified, that something else like horrible had developed, like super like cancer AIDS or something.
Is this like how like something like you'll like if you quit smoking, then it's like you just sweat tobacco for like a month and a half?
Or there could just be something wrong with all of that discount candy from Plaid Pantry.
It's entirely so tell us. I think you said this during a break. I don't think we actually said this in the year. So you actually you said at Plaid Pantry they were, was it novelty candy or different candy or just the discount candy that we talked about last week?
Well, last week about the sugar hole. It was about the candy.
The 27 cent candy bars.
Yeah. And the fact that it's, you know, you're there has to be something wrong. And now you can get free gum. I've gotten free gum, Mentos. Yeah.
Right here. I got free gum this morning.
I had some on Wednesday. There were all of these packages of Mentos sitting around over at Cascadia. And I went, what's this? And I grabbed them and I was looking at them. I'm like, oh, it's gum, because I don't really chew gum. But then I ended up trying one of those. The packages are awesome.
I actually brought this for you because I didn't want it.
Oh, okay. It tastes good, but I don't really chew gum.
Jim?
I got my pack on it already.
There we go.
They're children in Africa with healthy jawlines.
I will never turn down something free, even if I eventually throw it away. So, yeah.
But there has to be something woefully wrong with this candy and gum. because you can't be making any kind of a profit if you're giving away this much of a popular item. If it were like, you know, steno pads or stuff that has clearly been there for years and they'll never move unless you mark it down to this degree.
I think the problem is that Mentos is engaging in what marketers would call a line extension dilemma, which is where you take, you know, you have a popular product where everybody knows the name, like Pepsi. And then so because people already know, you've done all the work of establishing the name Pepsi and you've got all that mental real estate inside the mind of the customer, rather than starting a brand new drink, which is called, you know, called Zesta or something, you just create Pepsi Free, which had lemon in it, or, you know, Pepsi Light or Pepsi Diet or Pepsi Crystal.
Pepsi but Kona.
Every time you do something like that, you dilute the name value down. So what they must be running into some sort of problem where they figured that Mentos gum was just going to be a hit out of the gate because everybody knows the Mentos name. But a lot of people have a very strong sense of loyalty to their particular gum or their particular candy or whatever. So they've got all these people who are having like double mint or something, and they haven't tried the Mentos gum. And so now they've just put out this edict probably to start going, just give it to them then. Christ. Just anything to get people to try it.
Because my thing is I don't ever buy Mentos, but when they are, you know, afforded to me, I'm kind of pleased because I like Mentos. I like the texture of them. Yeah. It's not a candy I buy, but I'm very fond. One of my favorite candy textures is something that's kind of hard on the outside, but has a lot of give and sponginess on the inside. And so I thought, I saw those and I thought, ooh, nice packaging. Hey, Mentos. And then I picked them and I was like, oh, gum. Because I have this thing. I really dislike gum. Gum is annoying. You put gum in your mouth.
Gum is annoying.
It is. You.
How is it annoying? Is it like it's food that won't go away?
Pretty much. Yeah. You put it in your mouth. That tastes delicious. And you chew it. And you chew it. And chew it. And then the taste goes away. And then you have this wad of flavorless stuff in your mouth that now you have to figure out something to do with it.
That's
why are you putting gum in your mouth if you find it irritating?
Every once in a while, it's the only thing available to, like, you know, freshen my breath.
Okay.
But other than that,
that's what chairs are for. Just cram it underneath there and you grab another piece.
Yeah, seriously. And how hard is it just to go like when you're done?
Well, sometimes there's nowhere around to do it. I'm not going to just spit it out on the ground because someone might step in it. And that's wrong.
Okay.
So like yesterday at Cascadia.
What else does the gum do? Does it follow you home? Does it look in your window at night?
Does it crawl in your face with tiny little hairs?
I'm just saying.
Not everyone likes gum.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
No. This gum, I'm convinced was, I don't know, maybe it made in Chernobyl, or there's some kind of a contamination with it. I don't know. I just seem that it's very odd to be giving away this much gum for free.
Well,
along
it's odd
with
that,
very very cheap chocolate.
I was going to say it's odd that their candy's all 27 cents or something now.
Is the candy stuff still on sale?
It was at the Plaid Pantry where I was there. I guess it was last night, this morning, something I stopped by.
Well, now you can get like the Gargantuan, like double king size Baby Ruth for 88 cents.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like the regular king size Reese's is like $1.70.
See, and the thing about so I stop by the Plaid Pantry every now and again to see when their Viso goes on sale because that is the when it's on sale, it's cheaper at Plaid Pantry than anywhere else. I mean, cheaper than it is at Walgreens even. And Walgreens is typically your cheaper. That's a cheap, you know, that's like a 3 for $5 thing. But when they do the like $2 for $3 thing, I'll just go in and I'll buy like two cases of it and I'll just, you know, take it home that I'm good. So I stopped in the other. And the thing is, there's no way to tell. There's no website. You can't like, and I don't want to be like calling all the Plaid Pantry places.
Ask the Plaid Pantry guy? Do you say, I'd like to buy a couple of cases of Viso?
They're sworn to secrecy. They can't
grab them for you?
What do you mean?
No, I'm just saying.
They have, the cases are just out. I mean, they're just there out in the store always. But it's a question of when is this case going to cost me like $14 or whatever, and when is it going to cost me like $22? You can't really, and they don't put a sign in the window about it because that's space that's typically paid for by, you know, by businesses where like Budweiser, Pepsi or somebody, they buy the advertising in the window, so you have to go in and check. But I just out of habit, even though I didn't buy any, I stopped and looked at that candy display just to see if anything, because the thing about that 27 cent candy display at the Plaid Pantry, which I find just fascinating, and if it had not been so busy, I was at my favorite Plaid Pantry too, which is the one that's on, it's on like, I don't know, like 22nd or something. If it had not been so busy, I would have stopped to actually talk to the woman behind the counter and go like, what is up with this? Like, why the 27 cent candy? There's really nothing there that I particularly cotton to all that much. I mean, if they had one of my favorite candies there, I might actually just stock up on it. But I don't eat enough candy to really make it worthwhile, especially for candies that are not like on my A-list.
What do they have for 27 cents?
I forget. It was
Baby Ruth, Butterfinger, Crunch Bars, And 100 grand.
Yeah, see, and so that the 100 grand is the closest to something that I... Yeah.
You just explained the swelling in my ankles and legs. Diabetes kind of settling into my my joints.
Are you... I'm picturing now your carpal tunnel coming because you're at home like Veruca Salt's dad just shelling open candy bars by the millions. Faster!
Yeah, only the contest is life, and I'm clearly woefully behind.
Now somebody is taunting us in our carpal tunnel concerns. He says, oh, typing is so hard. Mixing frosting is so hard. I cut off the ends of my fingers.
Okay.
There's no further explanation given.
Oh, okay, then.
Well, didn't your girlfriend cut off her fingers at one point?
Yeah, but that was like doing something manly. She was in shop class.
He was like a table saw or something.
Table saw, yeah.
I don't know what this guy was doing.
Titanium fingertips, but I have discovered some other things at Plaid that I actually went and bought and brought in for you guys.
Awesome.
Oh, boy.
The first one is, it looks like just like your standard muffins. But it's from some Spanish company. Is the name of it?
Bimbo from yeah. Bimbo.
From Bimbo.
I love the Bimbo company. They make a product. They make I swear to God, it's just a piece of toast that they then put like some sort of peanut buttery topping on, and they seal it in a package. And it's like it is like a pre-toasted piece of bread that's also a dessert. And it's called Lara. And so L-A-R-A, and so it's like my wife has had her picture taken like several times in other countries with like, you know, Bimbo Lara products, which is awesome.
Bimbo Lara.
Well, in this one, Bimbo, who is a bear, he's their guy. Yeah, Bimbo is wearing a green jumpsuit, and he's on a parachute.
He's parachuting into deliciousness.
Because there's mini muffins.
Now, is the Bimbo line, is that from our friends at like Rinaldi or whatever that company is? Is the parent company, do they list? Because that might be the same folks who make Cranky.
This is Bimbo USA, and I'm not sure who...
I totally want to get a shirt that says Bimbo USA.
Land of whores.
So, you know, yesterday, my wife actually went to Provo. What's today? Today is Friday?
20s,
so,
yeah.
Yesterday, so she went to Provo yesterday, and of course, that's the great thing about Provo is that's where the Cranky came from. And so I have already placed an order that she got to bring home like as much Cranky as will fit in her bag. So
Wasn't like Aaron Duran supposed to give you a couple of boxes of Cranky?
He did. No, he found some at like in Hillsboro, I think. And then we had a listener actually located some when he was in Mexico. So you brought this mystery candy from Plaid. What is the next?
This stuff, I don't even know if I can pronounce it. Sponch?
S-P-O-N-C-H, and then it's got the sort of the upset, you know, the exclamation marks. Sponch or spunk. But I think sponch is probably how this is. So this has got six galletas or cookies, as your people
and
might
those,
say.
I won't even, you guys can feel free
this
to.
It's adorable. This is a tiny little muffin. Just it's so cute.
Okay, the sponch is a marshmallow cookie with strawberry and coconut topping.
Yeah, I ain't going to go near that.
Okay, I'll have one of these after the show. I don't know that I can eat it now.
Tasty muffin.
If I don't like it, this kind of thing might make your teeth itch. I mean, it looks very sweet.
Yeah.
Typically, not like your Mexican snacks, like Mexican candies, I like those more than candies that are, you know, like typical American candies because they're not as sweet. They don't have just like that horrible, like mouth-curlingly sharp taste of corn syrup. But every now and again, you'll get like a Mexican candy that is so ungodly sweet that it's like, it's just... You get one bite into it and you realize it's just, you know, that it's just doing something horrible to your inside. So this looks like it might be quite good. I'll try this after the show.
Well, I want to try a sponge while we're...
By the way, hold on. Ready? There we go.
All right.
By the way, apparently somebody has clarified that they said that the day you were thinking of Jim was when you talked about Don and I being announced. Apparently that was, they said Monday... A.K.A. the day Dawn realized / admitted she couldn't use the printer, which is not the case. It wasn't the entire printer. In her own, in Dawn's defense, it was not the printer. It was just that the ink part of it was sort of flummoxing. So that was, it wasn't like the printer as a whole.
It wasn't flummoxing. God damn.
It wasn't flummoxing so much as you just couldn't do it.
No, it wasn't even that I couldn't do it. I had never put the cartridge in this particular printer before.
I'm reaching for the button.
And we were pressed for time. And so I asked you to do it. God.
I didn't mean to reopen a closed door into...
As I think we've already established, I don't even remember the entire thing. So, you know, it's really... I think this is actually...
I like that sponge has exclamation points, by the way.
It's got the two. It's got the upside down one.
Mm-hmm. Sponge!
I think as we established, actually, or like within the first couple of months we were doing the show, that we were doing something or other, and I don't know. I was being my usual roguishly charming self, and Dom was just, like, getting more and more angry at me. And you were just like... like your sort of mental thermometer was just going towards that cartoony place where it goes like out the top. And finally, I just said, you know, like I'm just screwing with you or something. Or I said, I forget what it is, but I said, like, I'm just poking at you to see if you'll snap. And you sort of asked like a follow-up. You said, well, you're just provoking me. Like, how do you called yourself like a, like the bear in the cage or something? And I just said, yeah, I just want to see like how far I have to push you before you just begin screaming. So really,
why would you do that?
I don't know, because like there's no, because we don't have a TV here. I got to make my own fun.
Because I noticed that on Monday, because I was getting genuinely pissed off at you, and the more pissed off I got,
the more amusing it became.
Yeah, the more the happier it seemed to make you.
Yes,
you get to the point where you're positively giddy.
Yes.
With joy.
No, that's true.
Because I wasn't just like fun, haha, we're joking around, pissed off.
No, the fun was all on this side of the table.
I was actually getting pissed off.
Yes.
And you were just sitting over there going, hee, this is great.
No, that's an accurate depiction of the situation. I think you've laid it all out with total clarity.
You're a terrible person.
That's also true. All right, so we'll do Humor Me Comedy 101 coming up here in just a few with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Let's see. Oh, but before we do that, and before we even do any more news here, because we got to do, there's a whole bunch of crap we got to fit in today. We got to try to get to the top five at some point. So I don't have much setup on these except that you sent along these sound bites from. Tell me about this Tron porn film, and you can see a picture of this at facebook.com/Rick Emerson. It's a porn parody of Tron, which is called Prawn, which makes, and for those who may not, somebody asked me why it was spelled that way, and that's the sort of thing where on the internet, I don't know whether it's by, that's like a the T-E-H thing where it's a misspelling, or if prawn was an alternate spelling of porn that emerged and evolved as a way to get around word filters. But porn is occasionally spelled P-R-O-N online, and so Tron, prawn. And the great thing about that is that works on so many levels. The idea that it's a techie, you know, that it's like some tech movie that in fact uses the internet spelling of porn. It just it works. I mean, it's so glorious the way that all fits together.
Yeah, there have been a myriad of parodies that have been kind of like just flooding the market. It seems to be that the porn industry is ever expanding and trying to find what the next big thing is, and they've found it with great excitement. In basically just taking your classic favorite stories and TV shows and movies and making them, you know, hardcore pornographic. This one is, I would say, probably one of the better ones too, because there are some genuinely funny moments and good writing in it. The editing, however, needed to be tightened up a bit because there were some really good lines, but the beat in between was like killing it, and like with every passing second, like the laughter level was kind of like dropping.
Is that because of the acting or the editing?
I would say it's the acting, because it was all kind of done as is mostly done in pornography. It's all done in one take. So it's like, okay, everybody knows their lines, provided they don't get screwed up.
Right.
We're going to start here, and we're going to end with the money shot. So
now, let me ask you this: have you ever actually seen like a porn film being shot? Have you done that?
I've never been physically,
like on the set.
No, I've never been there yet.
That's a thing that that is on the list of things that I want to do in my life.
The Rick Emerson bucket list.
Yes. No. It seems like, you know, I've been talking about that for many years now, and I'm trying to think if we've ever been invited and we just haven't gone for whatever reason, or if I've just never received the invitation. But that is a thing I find it fascinating. The whole idea of there being like, you know, like a whole film crew and a setup and whatever for the porn film. So that is a thing that I would actually honestly like to see. And for reasons that are really not all that prurient, I just because if it was print, I could just, you know, just I got the DVD, just stick it in at home.
Yeah.
But the actual notion of the porn production is really fascinating to me, the industry side of porn.
Well, I have a friend, she and I were talking about this one day because we were talking about the fact that, you know, guys will go to the bunny ranch so they can have sex with, you know, actual porn actresses. For example, sometimes they do special appearances at one of these places and you can, you know, spend extra and be with them and that sort of thing. And this friend and I were talking about one day thinking, you know, what, and probably someone is actually doing this, but we thought there would be real money in porn fantasy camp where
they have that, I think.
Yeah, it's they have something called
F the Fans or something.
Bang a Fan.
Yeah. But I mean, if it wasn't just the banging the fans, that you could actually like write a little script and, you know, be involved in the actual production.
And then at the end, you get to take home your completed porn film as a souvenir.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's like, it's
Daryl Strawberry shows up to give you a little pep talk.
Yeah, it's not just about, like, having sex with it. It's about, like, actually sitting around and getting tips from professionals.
Being an impresario.
On how to make the movie.
Yeah.
It would be like part of the whole process.
It would be like that time I went to Universal Studios when I was a kid and I was in the Star Trek film. They picked me out of the audience to be in the Star Trek film where you interact with, you know, whatever. And then there's one of the lost artifacts in my collection. And I, just a side note, this is something, because we're talking about the Tron and tech stuff and fan films and whatever. So when I was a kid, I went to Universal Studios and there was this thing where, like, they show you the magic of filmmaking, which seemed a lot more interesting, I think, then before, you know, CGI and whatever. But the deal was it was showing you how a blue screen works. But it was the Star Trek, version of it that year. And the deal was that they would pick a handful of people out of the audience. And it was actually kind of cool. You would go backstage and they would take you to a dressing room and you would put on like authentic, like authorized Star Trek uniforms and costumes.
Awesome.
From the Star Trek, you know, from Universal or Paramount or whoever. And then you would...
The body odor of like 4,000 fanboys.
Totally, like everybody that year who had been in the bit, and then you would, and there was an audience watching the whole process. And meanwhile, there's a narration, like, you know, costumes are made, you know, in, you know, whatever, and they would show like the process of how a Star Trek costume is made. Meanwhile, we're backstage like putting on the costumes. Then they took us onto these sort of sets that were made by Paramount, and there was a sequence where we were, it was me and a couple of my relatives, and we were being attacked by a tentacle beast, and we're doing the full-on Bela Lugosi in Bride of the Monster thing where we're wrapping the tentacles around ourselves and holding them and going like, whoa! And then they have these pre-recorded film snippets from Nimoy and Shatner that they then edit in so it looks as though we're interacting with them. Anyway, and so you do all this, takes like half an hour, and at the end, you know, we get back, you know, we're done, we go back out of the crowd, and at the end, everybody watches the entire, you know, like, they kind of edit it and assemble it on the fly, and you watch the entire little mini Star Trek episode starring, like, us. And then for, like, $79, you can buy it on VHS or whatever to take home. So... My uncle, who was the one who took me to Universal Studios that day, of course, you know, he was a guy with a fair amount of money, and so he bought, you know, the Star Trek thing on VHS, and made me a copy of it, which I have.
$80 per.
It was a lot. I mean, it was a lot of goddamn money, and this was like when I was 12, so that was like 1980 whatever money. I mean, it was a lot of money they charged for whatever the take home tape was.
Yeah, I did that when I was a kid at Universal Studios once, and it was like a cop show, but. We did not spend the money to bring home the tape.
Well, I wouldn't have had it. I mean, my parents wouldn't have spent the money. They would have been like, you've got memories. You know, you don't.
Memories are free.
Replay it in your head.
So he took it home and he made a copy of it and I have it. And in one of my many, many radio moves, moving from one place to another, I have subsequently lost it. And I don't know if I still own it and it's just like it's not labeled or if it's just like been stuck inside. Because I have a lot of my VHS tapes that I keep telling myself I will digitize at some point. So I don't know if it's in a box somewhere, if it's in like a slipcase that is labeled something else, or if it's just flat out gone. And it is really one of my great regrets, one of the only things that I've lost or misplaced that I really truly regret. The idea that like at like 12 or something, I was in this full on Star Trek thing where I have the authorized uniform and I'm interacting with Shatner, but it is not yet at that line of demarcation where I am willing to call members of my family and actually interact with them to see if they have a copy. I have actually picked up the phone several times to go, I guess I'll just call some of my relatives and see if they have the original. Because it was a copy.
Is your uncle still alive?
I guess. Sure.
Wow.
Well,
really?
I'd never gotten a thing saying he's dead, so I'm assuming he's still alive.
Like a pamphlet or a leaflet? Like, by the way, your uncle's dead.
No, I mean, I mean...
So
I
you've have no, decided to mourn.
I have no reason to believe he's dead. so, I mean, you know, I don't really keep in touch with my family for the most part. I mean, but that's the thing.
Your ridicule
like,
of their inability to use basic electronics seems
it's
to
say. so it's just a question of like which you know is more which is power more powerful the urge to actually have a copy of this cool Star Trek thing
yes.
when I was a kid or. Like, just the irritation and annoyance it will cause me to have to interact with members of my family.
It would be worth it. Well, it would definitely be
for,
worth it.
Think you would only have to interact with them for a brief period of time.
I know.
Or you can even set it up where it's like, okay, you drop the bag
I was
at Central
say,
Park.
They'll know where I live. And
no,
maybe I could just get them to send it to my mom.
Wow, really?
Was
that like the last good thing that happened?
And then I stepped on a puppy in front of you or something. I mean,
well, look, I have to go.
Sit in a bear trap as you walked by coldly. Like, yeah, it sucks for that puppy.
Like, I have to go into my garage at some point and dig through boxes and boxes and boxes and see if I can find the reel-to-reel tape that my dad made when I was like five of me singing, which I have never heard because it's a reel-to-reel tape. And I need to like, and I thought.
That's just in your garage, though. It's not like you have to go track your dad down at a trailer park somewhere and get it from him.
Well, exactly, though. But I understand your pain because I don't even want to have to go through boxes in my garage, much less go on some Winter's Bone trip through hillbilly land to find whoever has the VHS tape.
Hire a bounty hunter or send someone, you know, to on your behalf to retrieve this.
By the way, these mini Montecatos are pretty great.
I love
sponge. Sponge is my new favorite thing. You probably won't like it so much because it's marshmallow, because you said you don't really care for marshmallow. But what I was saying, I have that thing of like mixed textures, and it's, first of all, it's very fancy. It's like a, let me show you this. It's
an hors d'oeuvre.
It's like a little cookie. You see, you got the cookie and the cookie. Rick Emerson knows it says sponge on the cookie. And then it has these little blurks of
it almost looks like miniature Hostess snowballs that have been put on a cracker.
Yeah, with then a little strawberry thing.
It's
in
like
the
something
of
you
it.
Would serve in a cotillion. I don't go.
And it's
that.
Delicious. It looks like
it looks
like
very
you said,
sweet.
It looks like it would be just tooth achingly sweet, but it's really not. It's actually.
I might try a little bit later.
It's quite delicious.
Well, okay, because I don't want to. Because apparently I've let you all down. I will. The thing is, I don't even know how to get in touch with my family. I mean, except for my mom, basically. I get a mom and a brother that I could call if I had to. Like if you told me today, like I gotta get in touch with them.
Get a True Grit guy to kind of go on your behalf and do it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll offer my brother some money to do it. I'll just
get another reason we need an intern.
I'll just it's not like they're in hiding or something. I'm just saying it's like I just don't I have no contact information from them and really no one to ask for that information.
Do you have a rag with their scent? Something that we could use to track them?
Well, here's what I'll do. I will because this is a thing that, and I actually would like to have it just because it's, you know, that's kind of, and in retrospect, it's a thing that was pretty great because, I mean, it's like there's like, I don't know, a couple hundred people in the crowd and they pick like four people.
Yeah.
And it was like me and one of my cousins and I think maybe my uncle himself and then like some other kid. And I haven't seen it since, I mean, like 1988, something like that. So, but I take it as an article of faith, though, that
and
my
that kid's name was Will Wheaton.
I do think that my uncle probably still has a copy of it because my uncle that part of the family was much more functional than my own. So. It's not like they probably have just burned everything that reminds them of their children. So so because my cousins were in it, at least one of my cousins and maybe both, but because at least one of my cousins was in that, my aunt and uncle probably still have a copy of it because their kid is in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, my cousin, their daughter is probably, you know, is in it, so they probably still have that. So what I'll do is I will actually contact my brother. Because it's just too distasteful for me to do it. But I will contact my brother, and I'll just offer him a little bit of a bounty if he can contact my uncle and rustle up a copy of that tape, which probably exists. Because I think, and let's be honest, and I mean, I look like a freaking retard in that thing probably because I've got the bad bowl haircut. I got thick-ass plastic frame glasses.
Did you have any lines?
That's a good question. I know that my cousin, and it wasn't. I don't believe it was my female cousin. I think it was my male cousin, Mark. I think he was in it. I think he actually has a thing where he picks up the little like CB radio thing and goes like, you know, Roger, sir, we're beaming down or something like that. And then that of course cuts to like some pre-recorded thing of Shatner going like, excellent, or, you know, engage or whatever the hell, you know, whatever he said. I don't think I had any lines, but there is a great shot of us. We're on the planet of, you know, cardboard rocks or whatever. And there is a great shot of us where the tentacles have come down as though from a, like an octopus thing in the sky. And they're these huge tentacles. I mean, they're like, you know, big, like air conditioner, you know, like vent hose stuff. And they were, you know, and they've wrapped the tentacles around us, and they tell us just to wave back and forth and scream, basically, just to sort of. And so there's a tight shot of me going like, ah, and like holding this big rubber tentacle around myself, you know, pretending that the creature is attacking me. So that's really my great moment.
It's
in the
Star Trek
film. Your
rusty venture boy adventurer, yeah. Kind of.
I'll see if I can find it. That because that is a thing that the audience would find. Everyone would find that amusing, I think, because I look terrible. Plus, it's Star Trek.
It seems like a Stephen King novel that where like you would have to go back into this like chapter of your life in order to retrieve this talisman. But think about what it would. You
no,
know,
it's the payoff is probably worth it. You're right.
Very much so.
All right. I'm.
No one else has anything like that.
No, it's you know, and that is a there was a little window of time. We ended up not doing it for a lot of reasons, but there was this window of time after I did the Bigger Than Jesus, which was all about, you know, music and music fandom and whatever. There was this window of time where the plan was to do a follow up to that, not really a sequel, but to do a follow up that was. Sort of the geek culture version of Bigger Than Jesus, where instead of, you know, autobiography merged with music memories, it was autobiography merged with geek memories. And so that was the plan, and it ended up not happening. But the plan was actually for that, because it was sort of a multimedia thing, Bigger Than Jesus was, the idea was that during the live performances of it, actually the opening of the stage play I think we were actually going to call it Geek Like Me, which is where the song title came from. I think the opening of that was actually going to be projected on wherever venue we were, was going to be like the Star Trek footage of me as like a 12-year-old. And that was the last time I even really thought about it. And then we ended up not doing that, and so I didn't have to try to track it down. So anyway, but I'll find it. It's
we will hold you to this.
All right.
I could also dig around, and I'll bring in my photos of me from whenever I hold up was like 8 or something. My dad took a whole bunch of pictures of me at Universal Studios, like, you know, sitting in the giant Land of the Giants chair, and my dad and I both in the stocks in the Western town. And I'll show you those.
Are they sepia toned?
No, they're, well, you know, they're crappy old style photos that we all like to recreate now with our iPhones for nostalgia's sake. But that's just what our
But it wasn't. I mean, in other words, it was like when you say weird looking. It's not like the posed photos where you dress up in a garter like you're at a brothel or something.
Oh no, it was this thing where you would walk around Universal Studios and there was this commissary area where they had a giant chair and a huge telephone that supposedly had been used in Land of the Giants, and you would sit in them or on them. They would take pictures. And then there was a Western area, and there were, like, you know, stocks, and you could just walk over. So, yeah, no, they're just crappy photos taken with my parents' Instamatic.
Is this like that photograph of Cheryl Kanakoa with the Cylon?
Yes.
Which is, like, the best thing ever. Have you seen that?
Yes, very much like that.
For a long time, it was her Facebook profile picture, and it's not now. But it's a picture of her when she's, like, I don't know, like 8 or 9, and she's with one of the old school, like, Centurion Cylons.
Right on.
It's awesome. And I guess it's, like, at Universal Studios or someplace. It might be in Hawaii even. I don't know. But there's someplace like that where they were like, you get your picture with a Cylon. And she's, like, 9. And it's, like, the great washed-out 70s photograph, obviously, like her parents or somebody took it. And it's, like, her with a Centurion. It's, like, badass. It's one of the best photos ever.
The only thing that could make that better would be, like, if the old school Starbucks on the other side just kind of, like, everybody get in here for a big group picture.
Well, that's, like, my wife has she has, like, framed in some of her stuff somewhere. She has an autographed signed to her photo from Vic Tayback. How great is that?
Oh, nice.
Like, Laura, all the best. She's like 5, you know. Laura, thanks.
All the best.
Thanks for the laughs. Vic Tayback. And she made her, when she was a small child, she made her parents stand in line for like 4 hours to meet Vic Tayback to get her picture, or to get, you know, like a signed picture of him, because she was such a huge fan of Alice. She just loved Alice when she was a little kid, could not get enough of it. She was like, Vic Tayback's going to be here. You have to take me. And so the line was endless, and they just stood in line forever. Her parents
during
did.
The salad days for Vic Tayback.
Whatever problems I have with her parents and whatever problems her parents have with me, that is a thing that I think we can all agree. That's a thing I cannot take away from her mom and dad, that they were in line for like 4 hours.
Jeez.
You know, like in Provo or whatever damn place to get autograph photograph for their daughter of Vic Tayback, which at the time they probably thought was, it probably seemed crazy then. I mean, they probably went like, you're in kindergarten. I mean, he's Vic Tayback. What's going on here? You know, it's like there's no reason for this.
This is a time before Amber Alerts. I mean, this guy looked like...
And oh, it's dude. Awesome because he's totally in his full Alice getup with the rolled up sailor hat. which is
wonderful.
Great. I mean, it really is. It's quite something. So... All right. This, like, an hour ago, we started talking about the Tron thing.
Yeah.
All right. So do you – I don't know if you have the list of the cuts in front of you, but I can just tell you what they're called, and if you want to give me a little bit of a background on them or if any – you know, if there's any sort of context we need to understand these.
Basically, it is – the movie itself is kind of like a mashup of the two stories come together. So there really isn't any kind of continuity. It's kind of its own – beast, but it is borrowed heavily from the Tron story.
All right. So the first one is called the first cut is called 80s Novelty Sex Toys.
Yes, these are the sex toys that the not Flynn but Fling's character had.
Is that what he's called?
Yeah, and, okay. and like goes through a myriad of attempts. Like, don't call me Flynn.
Now I should ask: is this a parody of Tron or of Tron Legacy?
Like I said, the Tron Legacy, it's kind of like a hybrid of the
okay,
two.
Okay, so they're morphed together. Okay, yeah. All right, so let's see. 80s novelty sex toys.
Ed Dilliker decided to steal all the boy geniuses' sex toy molds and ideas.
What did he steal?
Oh, just the entire collection of 1980s pop culture reference sexual aids. You know, products like the Dyke Saber, the Fletchlight, the TJ Hooker boots, and of course, the flagship product, the Knight Rider nipple clamps.
You invented all of that? You should be a millionaire like Ed McMahon.
Okay, so first of all, here's why these are gold. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
What does the sound effect cause? What is causing the sound effect of the Knight Rider nipple clamps? What are they doing?
It's some kind of metallic device that looks nothing like an actual functioning nipple clamp, but it has like this kind of like a box that would be worn.
Does it look like any part of Knight Rider?
Yeah, not really, but for legal purposes. But there is a little light that kind of goes.
Oh, I
across.
See. That's the sound.
Yeah. They obviously couldn't even get anywhere near that sound effect either.
How hard is it to just hire a guy to sit behind a mic and go? I mean, Jesus.
And there's a couple of scenes that there's a lot of good visuals in this, and by good I mean horrifyingly bad. But like the whole light cycle variations that they try to pull off are just horribly bad and low budget.
Is this worth watching?
I would say so. I would say it's definitely worth a viewing, if only for the nostalgia's sake.
Also, you can tell. Here's another thing about this clip.
Ed Dilliker decided to steal.
You can tell that it's a porn film because the dialogue recording is so bad. I mean, it's like I don't know what it is in porn films. They've never heard of like a lapel mic or something, or just like holding the microphone close enough that you don't get the echo of the cardboard room you're standing in. Every porn film has this like horrible flat cardboardy echo in the background when they're doing their dialogue. All right,
there's check out copyright CYA.
Okay, copyright CYA.
This is how they got around.
We came to talk to you, Flynn.
I'm not Flynn. I'm Fling. That's what you call me. Either that or Flinger, El Flingerino, his Flingness. Unless you're not in the whole brevity thing, which is cool, but I'm definitely not that name that you just called me, nor do I resemble that person in any way, shape, or form. Right, Lana and Alex?
So there's the thing about this is this actually answers one of the questions I've always had is when they talk about the porn, you know, when you'll see like in porn credits, they'll go script by, written by, and you're like, well, what script? But I mean, it's for these kinds of films where there is actually some sort of a plot and some, you know, genuine attempt, if under budgeted attempt, to do parody and satire of something.
Well, and I love the fact that they're like, no, we're not Flynn, we're Fling. But then completely and blatantly rip off the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Yeah, with not even so much as the bat of an eye. They're just like, that's fine.
Let's see. What else do we have?
Let's see here. The Hall & Oates one, I think, is one of my favorites.
You think you can pretend like you don't know where my files are? I got news for you, sweetheart. I got hacking skills that'll seduce the shit out of you.
Come on, relax. It's the 80s. Look, why don't we just forget about all those files for a few minutes and you let me show you my method of modern love, huh?
Did you really just try to impress me by referencing Hall & Oates?
You're a man-eater?
Well, here's I believe that may be the first time that I've heard some sort of a Sorkinian pop culture reference dropped inside a porn film.
Yeah.
I mean, well done.
Yeah, I was kind of at work. And which I probably shouldn't be saying, but who cares? I just sort of had this sort of running on my laptop. And
wait, are you afraid you're going to get in trouble because you're watching porn at work?
Well, no, because I was using my laptop and recording stuff for here.
Well, this is for advertising
for my own personal
purposes.
Yeah, for my own personal edification.
No, this is business. This is an inducement to go to your business and buy the product.
Oh, I guess that's true.
This is not unlike when Jay Leno plays a clip, from the new Matthew McConaughey film. It's so people will
like
go
that.
Spend their money on it.
But no, I basically had this running and was off doing something legitimate, work related. But as soon as I heard that Method of Modern Love, I just kind of like snapped and looked over and like this confusing look. She's like, and then she kind of totally calls him on it.
Right.
Like, did you just reference Hall & Oates? And then he goes like, you're a man eater.
And that's a recent dialogue development. The idea of the person, because what we've had in Hollywood comedies forever is the person saying something strange or that's a pop culture reference or something absurd or ludicrous. But a recent development and it's also I think it's like a post who's the guy that directed Anchorman? I'm going to say, is it Adam McKay?
Yeah.
But Adam McKay's films and Will Ferrell and Judd Apatow films have started doing this a lot. Apatow actually maybe deserves more credit for anybody this. The idea of the straight man in the scene actually stopping and dissecting and referencing the absurd thing that the idiot character just said, you know, such as when Will Ferrell says, you know, San Diego, it means a whale's vagina or whatever. There was a time in American films where he would just say that and like, that's the laugh line. And then he moved to the next thing. A recent development is the idea that everybody else in the scene is sort of aware of the idiocy and says, no, it's not. And he goes, yes, it is. No, it's. I've got a dictionary right here. It's not. It just means San Diego, you know, or whatever. And so it's weird to see the lag time between that happening in American film and it creeping into porn.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder where they get porn screenwriters from. And are they, in fact, just frustrated Hollywood screenwriters? Are they current Hollywood screenwriters who moonlight by writing porn films? Is it frustrated porn actors who they go, well, look, we don't have any acting jobs, but if you can write, you can do a script. I mean, where are they getting the guys who are writing, like, the Tron porn film from?
That's a very good question. I can look into this.
This fascinates me. I really am just the industry behind porn is really interesting to me.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you want, I can – I've got nothing but a wealth of material.
You're people who knows people.
Well, yeah, that and like the amount of parodies that we carry at my store is staggering.
I have – okay, here's the thing. Well, let me hold on a second. Everybody just amuse yourselves for just one moment here. Hold on a second. Hello, everybody. I didn't know if we could mention that or not, but you and I talked about, you know, you
there,
have a...
There was no masturbating going on just then, though. Just thought I'd mention
Dutch Rudder. Two,
anyway,
three, four.
Thank you. you mentioned that you had sort of a desire to bring back the late night horror movie B host,
yeah.
Goulardi vampire sort of a thing. And you know, we talked about how it might best be done, and what sort of budget is required, and how do you get a station or an outlet to run some sort of like a throwback to the Commander USA style movie hosting thing. Here's something that the idea that I've had for the longest time. You know what you could put on TV and it would probably be a weird cult hit, especially among college kids / stoners, is just, and I don't think anybody's done this, is just taking porn films and just editing out the sex and just showing, the so-called, like the dramatic scene parts. You're just editing out the sex and just show the dialogue sections.
There are more than a few parodies that we carry that there's an option in the menu that you can just watch the actual scenes, and it is like sex free.
That's with like actual like with the parody stuff where you're just watching it for its own sake. Like, hey, let's watch this Brady Bunch parody. You know, this XXX Brady Bunch parody. I'm talking about where you just get some terribly produced generic porn film.
Yeah.
But where they try to have the, the hot water heater's broken in my apartment. I guess I will have to use yours. And you just have all the terrible, stilted, bad, contrived dialogue sequences, and you run it all together, and you make that like a 22-minute show plus commercials. And I'm telling you, if you were like lived in a dorm, that would be required viewing every Friday. You just get a bunch of guys in the room. Maybe they load up a little smoke. You watch that. That's like a 70 share. I mean, you would get every college kid in the world watching that if they were like just running just the hilariously bad like dialogue sequences from a porn film as its own standalone show. You don't make it too long. You make it like 22 minutes. And then, you put in spots, and that's a half an hour programming on Comedy Central at 1 in the morning. I'm telling you, and it's like, think of how cheaply you could probably acquire that footage. I mean, that is good. And there's nothing, and there's no reason you couldn't air it. There's nothing unairable about it if it's not the sexual content. Johnny, right now, that's a gold idea.
Patent pending. Patent pending. Patent
you
pending.
Could,
Copyright.
You and your employer should totally put that together and pitch that.
Done.
You pitch that to that channel.
Mr. Big.
You know, that place.
Yes.
Where I do that thing. You know what I'm saying?
Picking up what you're putting down.
Ka-chow. All right. I don't know what that sound indicates. The ka-chow, it doesn't really mean anything in particular. All right.
But if you'd like, I can do this again next week, select another quality fit. We've got
absolutely
the Justice League parody that just came out as well. We've got a wealth of Star Trek, Star Wars, and then just like legitimate stories as well.
I vote yes to all these things.
Okay.
Let's do one more of these, then we'll do Humor Me Comedy 101. I've got annoying theme song.
That's kind of pretty much like their version of like the running theme from, or the running theme song from Tron.
Okay, so let's... This is... Clearly, the bulk of the production budget went.
Clearly, and if this
What's
is annoying to you at all,
there?
It is. It is. This is basically just like they're. Whenever they're in the virtual realm, this is all. This is going on the entire time. So, if this is annoying in any way, you probably want to steer clear of this film because you get a lot. You get a healthy dose of it.
It sounds like some sort of a ping pong game or something happening in the. All right, there. I can see how that would probably irritate you over long periods of time. Somebody sent me a link to a trailer for The Human Sexipede.
Yes, we have that one, that film as well. The new Friday the 13th.
You just laughed at that.
Oh, my God. Well, also because just, oh, my God.
The Human Sex. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's no good.
No good can come from that in any way at all.
It's just a daisy chain. It's nothing really all that traumatic.
Yes, that, I think, by the way, if you ever ask yourself, what was the day that it was pointed out to me how jaded I had become? When you just said, it's just a daisy chain, it's nothing really to, you know, that is... That was the moment when you knew that your life had taken you to some strange places. But, oh, come on, Don. Jesus. So,
well, I have to say, I agree. It's like, well, if it's only a daisy chain, well, then okay. But having seen The Human Centipede, and I'm just thinking of a porn version of that.
Well, I guess we got next week's selection then. All right.
Did you watch The Human Centipede? Why?
Yeah.
Well, for what reason? You don't have to review it.
No, for the same reason you keep telling me I'm supposed to be like, listen to that Rebecca Black song and stuff.
Rebecca Black song is 3.5 minutes long.
Yeah, everybody was talking about the damn thing, and I felt like I should know.
It's a 90-minute film. There's limits.
I've seen it as well for our friend James Robinson. He does a first-run commentary. That was the first movie we actually sat down and all of us watched without having any pretense. We knew of it, but we didn't. None of us had actually watched it. And we sat through it, and I was gearing up for, like, the worst. Like, I had a bucket ready just in case it got too scary. But as soon as I realized that the doctor or the evil mad scientist looked just like, come on. I need more cowbell.
Christopher Walken?
As soon as I knew he looked like Walken, I'm like, this isn't, no. The teeth instantly left the mouth of this movie. I was just like, no, this isn't scary.
I watched it all the way through, but just because
wasn't scary.
No, I could tell a few minutes in that it was crap. But my whole thing is, if a movie is terrible, those are the movies actually that I will force myself to watch all the way to the end, because otherwise you get somebody going, well, you didn't watch the entire thing. You got to wait till the end. It gets really good. And like that was like my thing with Napoleon Dynamite. I remember sitting in there in the theater and just going, well, this is bad. This is terrible. Oh, my God, this is the worst thing I've ever... I actively hate the people involved in this film. I will watch to the bitter end. Because then it's like, then I wanted to be able to be full-throated in my criticism of the film. So it is with The Human Centipede.
Yeah, so, okay, that'll be our selection for next week, Human Sexipede.
Excellent. That's awesome. All right, let's see. I'm sorry, it seems like this happens every day this week, but I mean... Squires Electric.
On the heels of that heated conversation.
I don't know why that seems to be taking place. It's not like I'm intentionally doing that. It just seems to be the way that it's working out.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Well, in any event, Squires Electric, you can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Or you can call 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. Somebody's asking if this is the... if this is the moment where Cheryl and her mother will begin listening to the program, probably it's like some inverse, like some weird anti-bat signal or something, where You know, it's like they only turn on the show at those moments where we're discussing something horrible or phallic in some way. Squires Electric can be reached at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And that means they can come to your home or your business, and not only are they going to be able to fix what ails your electrical setup, whether it's your wiring or your... you know, you got your fuse box, or you just got the fact that you got one outlet in the room and you really need like 15, or you got 15, but they're all like directly above the bathtub, which maybe seems like maybe not the brightest way to install those things. You just want to have everything running properly, and you want to get it done quickly, and you don't want to be like, you know, paying out the nose or anywhere else for it. You contact Squires Electric at 503-252.
Speaking of the human sexapede.
Indeed. 1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also find them on Facebook at facebook.com/squireselectric. Wires Electric. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is Squires Electric. All right. Then we'll do. We're gonna do one little brief break here, and then we will. Frankly, because it's stiflingly hot in the studio.
It is.
So I'm gonna get ourselves a little air. So we'll do that. We're gonna come back on the other side with Humor Me Comedy 101 from Mr. Big Jim Willig. And I believe we have. We did our taser watch. Yes. Do we have a? Are we still with a watch that we need to do?
We do have a clown watch.
All right, so we got that coming up. So we're going to do a clown watch here in just a few as well. So that's going to be coming up momentarily. So stand by. The Rick Emerson Show continues in just a few. Don't go anywhere. It is the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're here with Mr. Big Jim Willig. In mere moments, we'll have another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Really, I had a second one of those. What are those muffins called?
Those were called Pocket
have
Delicious.
Have we eaten them all?
We did.
All right.
There's only four. Montecitos.
All right, because the Plaid Pantry is now that is a thing where they've like the with like some of the like the Mexican candy or the Bimbo stuff. That's a recent addition. They didn't used to have that in such abundance.
Yeah, they've been ramping up. There's a bunch of stuff now that is
in response to shifting demographics and customer tastes.
I would say so.
Which is good though, because it's like normally you would just have to sort of trek all over town to find like a Mexican grocery or something to get that stuff. So I, Mark Emerson is a fan of that. I heartily endorse it. All right. Well, let's do this because we have actual news. Together, let's do like one story here, as sort of a nod to actual news content, and then we'll get Humor Me Comedy 101 done. I'll just news. Don Taylor.
Well, okay. Let's do our clown watches. This was sent to me by an alert reader.
All right. Here's your clown watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's Don Taylor.
This comes from listener Jim.
Listener Jin, who lives inside a small bottle and haunts unsuspecting homeowners.
Want to let us know about this case from Lewiston, Maine, in which a prop called Cora Clown's Weight Loss Machine was stolen from the back of a pickup truck on the night of April 12, 13, which leaves the Shriners without one of their more popular clown gags. Generally, what would happen if they had the machine? A large clown named Cracker with a K would crawl into a bright yellow box. Bulbs flash blue, green, red. A buzzer sounds. Smoke pours out of the box. Confetti flies to the air. And moments later, the clown emerges half the size he was before.
That's less impressive if it's somebody who's covered in makeup and wearing a costume.
Yeah.
The idea that it's, oh my God, it's the same guy, but he's smaller. I mean, it doesn't really seem to...
Well, Cracker Clown's weight loss machine dazzles audiences wherever it goes.
That's such a lie. That's such a lie. There's nothing true about that statement. That's just not true.
But now it's missing, having been stolen from the back of Cracker's truck. The theft was a trick in itself, they say. At 400 pounds, the bulky box could not have been an easy thing to carry away. Lewiston Police Lieutenant Michael McGonigal said, "The machine is very large and heavy and would need more than one person to move." Detectives are on the case. And they're not clowning around.
Really?
Oh.
Really? They're not? And they felt that that was the tag to go out on in the story, right?
Right. Okay. Leads have been developed. Police and the Shriners, who use the box to entertain crowds at the circus, there's an actual circus that they do this at, are hoping the thieves will bring it back. Shriner Michael Morin said, "It's not a high-value item, but it means a lot to us and to the kids." The prop was taken from the back of Cracker's truck. And was one of the more popular gags that the Shriners have. Jim Bennett, who's also known as Jinjo the Clown.
Jinjo.
Said the guys are scrambling now to put together something for the Augusta Circus shows by Friday and Saturday. The box was constructed by the Shriners Clown Unit.
Is Clown Unit like, is that like 50 cents G unit?
Clown Unit?
By the way, Clown Unit with a K.
Of course. Yeah. Why? It's a law.
By the way, there is a trick to it. It's Cracker who goes to the machine, but a slimmer clown named Stumpy who comes out.
Stumpy. What kind of low budget? I mean, look, I mean, even for the Shriners, it seems like this is a dollar store kind of operation that they've got going on here.
And
the slow news day doesn't even begin. This is a news day that has grinded to a halt.
The news day is stuck in amber.
And Rob Farrington of the Shriners Clown Unit feels it's important to note that, yes, two clowns are needed to do the trick. Because, as he says, it's a pretty cool little skit. But it doesn't really work.
Okay. By the way, when you said that he felt it necessary to add, whatever he was going to say, that poem was not necessary. I mean, there was nothing.
I hope the people who stole it don't think it's really going to turn them into a smaller clown.
Jesus. All right. There's your clown watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program. For the love of God. All right, then. There you go. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's turn the microphone over, as we do every Friday, to Mr. Big Jim Willig for another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101.
I gotta follow that? Okay.
I like to raise the bar high because I find it brings the best out in you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Long before that you see your name up in lights, before you sign that eight-figure contract, before you walk out onto that stage, you are, in point of fact, just a normal person. Boring, fleshy, filled to the sugar hole with faults. Carbon series 001. First, you must learn to overcome personal difficulties. What kind? Well, how about a car accident at an early age that leaves you scarred, suffering from nightmares and memory loss, and lands you in a mental institution? Maybe we toss in a little multiple personality disorder, dash of sexual abuse. And for good measure, there's a baby that you gave up for adoption when you're 17. Laughing yet? Though it is from this meager pedestrian existence that you begin to extrapolate these human moments in order to sharpen your sense of humor into a finely honed weapon with which you will no doubt poke the eye of the eager masses. Enter Roseanne Barr, stage left.
So I'm fat, I thought I'd point that out.
Is she quiet?
The world is our bitch and we'll bust a cap in her ass if she don't do what we say!
Yeah, just before she strikes. How about a nurturing caregiver?
Yeah, because what do you want when you're depressed, you know? Some skinny mom, well, why don't you jog around a while, and that'll release adrenaline in your blood, and you'll better cope with stress. Or some fat mom, well, let's have pudding, Oreos, and marshmallows. When you wake up from that sugar coma, it'll be a brand new week.
All that and a doggy bag of love. Roseanne is like if your mom ran for Congress.
They think the uterus is a tracking device.
But turned it down because she's tired of taking care of children. What you see on the stage is 100% real, but barely a drop in the complicated bucket that is Roseanne Barr. And with that, I turn things over to the two other Lanford local legends, Rick, don't call me Booker Emerson, and Dawn, domestic goddess Taylor. Your thoughts on the original She-Devil, Roseanne Barr.
I just made a She-Devil reference the other day. I was talking about Tic Tac Pie, as made by Edie McClurg.
Yes.
Your thoughts on Dawn Taylor. I'm sorry, Roseanne Barr, Dawn Taylor in the back.
It's funny because my initial thoughts whenever I hear mention of Roseanne Barr, like a lot of people, I just kind of cringe because in later years, her persona from her personal life was just so unpleasant.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, that is a stark reminder that her stand-up was really funny.
Yeah.
And her TV show, at least until it just kind of started to go off the rails the last year or so, her sitcom was very, very funny.
Yeah.
And she really did have an amazing sense of timing. And also just that she was, particularly as a stand-up performer, she was really unusual. She originally appeared kind of doing this, you know, the domestic goddess, I'm just a housewife shtick. But it became apparent fairly quickly that she was much more than that. Particularly, like a lot of really great comedians, there's just the simmering anger underneath of everything she does that goes along with the laughter. That just was genius. She was actually just absolute genius at stand-up.
What kind of amazes me is normally if you are any kind of entertainer, be it stand-up or musician or anything else, you have your dream as a kid, and then once you're old enough and able to go out and chase it, that's what you do. And you spend the first part of your life just chasing it as far as you possibly can. If you make it, great. If not, you kind of basically had to settle down at some point and accept the fact that you're going to live, you know, a standard life where, you know, you have a day job that you go to, and maybe you still stick with it a little bit, and then on your free time you go out and you still do comedy, or you still, you know, get together with the boys in the band and, you know, do a show at the Lobo every once in a while. But to have already had a life established, have kids, have a husband, and still be like, you know what, there's still part of me that needs to do this. And then to then start at that late a date and still think you're going to make anything of your career, I think is admirable, you know, to the bitter end.
Well, see, I mean, she's kind of like Rodney Dangerfield in that way, who I think Dangerfield didn't start comedy until he was like 40 or 41.
Yeah.
He was very, you know, very late in life, especially in the entertainment industry. And it was the same thing where he had lived, you know, he'd lived this life that was, you know, fairly conventional, but had always wanted to be a comic. And at a certain point decided, like, this is it. Like, you know, I'm going to go for it now, even though, you know, the clock and the calendar and conventional wisdom and probably everybody around me tells me it's a bad idea. And she did the same thing. And it was even more difficult for her, of course, because she was a woman in a field that, you know, even now is male dominated, but was especially so 20 or 25 or 30 years ago. And was not sexing herself up, was not doing. I mean, even, you know, Joan Rivers, who we talked about, Joan Rivers was, you know, she was loud and brassy and you know, broke a lot of boundaries. But also Joan Rivers was, in most ways, a socially presentable woman. You know, that you saw her on TV and you went, well, you know, she's just a nice Jewish girl from Long Island, you know, and just, you know, with such a nice figure. but Roseanne just had, you know, her whole thing was she just didn't care about any of that, and it was just like one big punch in the social balls. I mean, her stand-up act. I mean, and her, I don't know. I have so many thoughts about Roseanne. I mean, I would say that more than anything, to sort of skip to my overall with her, I think more than anything, I think Roseanne kind of makes me sad. I get sad when I think about Roseanne because for one thing, she doesn't seem any happier now. She doesn't seem any happier, and she in fact seems a lot crazier than she used to. I mean, she doesn't. When I see her interviewed now, it's not like, I mean, I can get the whole thing of like, you know, comedians or performers of, you know, musicians, whoever, of any stripe, that, you know, they have some sort of, you know, internal strife, or they have, you know, issues from their childhood, or they have, you know, like struggles with their own sense of self and whatever. And, you know, and out of that comes comedy and, you know, all of that stuff that they say, and, you know, that that, you know, turning their pain into humor and whatever. And so if you buy that, which I do for a lot of performers, you can see where they get to a point in their life where they're sort of happier and they're not so discombobulated inside. But then as a result, they're not necessarily driven to they're not driven to write, the greatest rock album ever made all the time. They're not driven to do brilliant stand-up. They're not driven to write the great American novel all the time. So I can see that that is a trade-off sometimes. You become happier and more well-adjusted as you grow up. You don't necessarily create works of sort of brilliantly unstable art. But she kind of seems to be the worst of both worlds in that I don't think she's not nearly as funny as she used to be, or if she is, it's not in a venue where it really is allowed to shine. She doesn't seem to present it to people. I don't know that she really performs that much anymore or really puts herself out there. And yet you see her in an interview and she seems even crazier and even more unhappy than she did in the mid to late 80s. It's like we still have, you know, the Roseanne show for all the golden years that ran. And even in the end, when the Roseanne show turned completely crazy, when it just became this bizarre, like, unspoken reality show where it's like by watching the sitcom every week, you were also getting this window into how nuts Roseanne was and to the bizarre production decisions that were being made behind the scenes. I mean, we still have those shows to watch and we still have early stand-up, and that's fine. And I can't take anything away from that, but it does seem like of all of the people involved in Roseanne's life, whether it's her or whether it's Tom Arnold or whether it's her first husband or whether it's that bodyguard guy that she married later on, it seems like the big loser in Roseanne's character arc is her. And so I guess I've always felt a little bit sad for her that she didn't. It seemed like, unlike a lot of performers, she never really got out of performing or out of show business what she wanted to. You know, she didn't come out of that as some sort of a I've healed myself through laughter thing.
Yeah, usually stand-up is your therapy. It is the thing that you need to do, and that kind of helps exercise a lot of the demons that have also, you know, to the other end of the sword, helped you develop all these great stories and great jokes and perception on life. But when you get to that level of stardom and fame that she climbed to, that proposes in a totally different new gaggle of issues and problems, you know. And the problem is now all these things that once were no longer accessible to you, you can get your hands on anything that you want. And people that want to keep you happy will feed you things that they think that you want or will keep you kind of on the same field that you are. And ultimately, it tends to bring in more issues than it cures. So she was already fractured.
I'd like to find out what that's like, though.
Yeah, to be rich beyond your wildest dreams. And
yes, and to have people just saying yes to me for everything and then just giving me everything I could possibly want just for a little while. Yeah. I'd like to find out what that's actually like.
Celebrity
I just think
fitness
that
camp.
She really is the embodiment of that, you know, when people talk about money not buying happiness or buying whatever. I mean, it just seemed like it just allowed her to be crazier on a much larger scale. And in a way that eventually undid all of the progress she had made in her own career.
And over the years, she obviously has very publicly tried so many different ways to make herself happier and to feel better about herself. Plastic surgery, you know, weight loss, you know, cycling through relationships. And yeah, it hasn't worked.
No, it's she is the source of one of the sort of ongoing jokes that we've had on the show over the years about don't look me in the eye, you know, and you're no longer Jim Willig, you're five, and you, Dawn, you're seven, and that's from the Roseanne show, where at a certain point they just assigned numbers to the crew, and you weren't allowed to look her in the eye, and she addressed everybody by a number because she didn't want to know anybody's name. And it's like, and really, I mean, that stuff makes a funny gag and whatever, but it's like, you know, there's a real person kind of behind all that. And you think that, you know, your reward for enduring all the crap that she did growing up and how, you know, and there's her family, you know, as is sometimes the case, claims that that's not true. And maybe it is. Maybe it's all true. Maybe none of it's true. Maybe the truth, maybe the reality is somewhere in the middle. But it's clearly enduring a lot of stuff, you know, growing up and then still feeling unfulfilled when she was an adult. And she goes through all of that, and she struggles, you know, in this male-dominated world of comedy, and then in the even more male-dominated world of television, and fights her way through, and then gets absolute complete control of her show, which is what she always wanted. Had control of her career, she had control of her show, and nobody was going to tell her what to do, and she was in charge of the entire thing, and there was not going to be any shot caller telling her how to operate. And then so as soon as she got all of this power and control over her career, it's like she just made a wreck of the entire thing.
Yeah.
And it's not like she has to carry the torch for all female entertainers anywhere, but it's like that certainly didn't do the struggle any favors, and it didn't do her any favors. Because the lesson there was like, we'll see what happens when you give those nutty women control of their shows. They just drive it into the ground. And I'm not saying that's a fair way to look at it, but that was the thing that was a cudgel that was wielded against other comedians. Brett Butler's talked about that.
Yeah.
She, by the way, is a little crazy herself, but well, she's talked about the curse of, you know, the tarnished legacy of Roseanne that the females on television had to carry around for a long time.
Although it does make you wonder about Chuck Lorre. If Chuck Lorre is just sort of like an enabler who is attracted to crazy, or if he is himself the instigator of crazy, because, you know, he ended up getting fired off of Roseanne because of their famous, you know, battles when he created her show. Chuck Lorre was behind Brett Butler's show and ended up,
right,
like, fighting. Cybill Shepherd, he did a show with Cybill Shepherd and ended up, like, publicly complaining about how crazy she was and how much, and she talked about how much she didn't get along with him. And so there's some point at which I guess he's like, well, okay, maybe it's the women's. I just keep picking crazy women. I'm going to do a show with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. And 2.5 men.
Yeah. And so what happens like several years later?
Mega explosion.
Mega explosion with a crazy guy who's publicly excoriating Chuck Lorre. And so it's like, is he just have like really bad luck in the people he chooses to work with? Or is he partly responsible for the crazy?
But
every one of those shows for at least a good period of time were hits. Grace Under Fire, I loved. Roseanne obviously lasted the better part of a decade, if not a complete decade, and then some. So I think Chuck Lorre can just make crazy profitable
until he
can no longer handle it.
When did he leave Roseanne? When did he leave the show?
Early on, within the first couple of years, the second season or something, because he created the show and got it off the ground, but apparently he and Roseanne just loathed each other.
You know what would be interesting is to go back and you know what somebody's never written about, and maybe they haven't, I just haven't seen it, but I don't think I've ever seen like a sort of behind the scenes, you know, not even gossipy, but just a sort of behind the scenes what really happened analysis of that whole insanity with the last few years of Roseanne where they won the lottery and became, you know, whatever. Like, I want to know, like, where did that come from? Did everybody just go, that's a great idea, let's do it? Or, I mean, were there long meetings where people sat down and went, all right, now you want to do what? And were they, I mean, I want to know the mechanism by which that actually was put into place.
Well, I think she said at the time that part of it was just that her public image was so big and people knew that she wasn't working class and she wasn't, because she was spending her own money hand over fist very publicly. And so I think she felt like on some level it was kind of, you
presumably
know,
people know she's acting anyway.
I know.
I mean, it's, you know.
I know. I think she just got tired of playing working class when she was trying so hard to be something else. I think she didn't want to present herself as white trash anymore because she was trying so hard, you know. She was trying so hard to buy her way out of that despite her own personal behavior.
Yeah, it's weird. I wonder if I wonder if we will ever kind of hear the actual story of how that all happened. I know it's strange, actually, that Roseanne has been off the air for the longest time, but that is a show, and there aren't a lot of shows like these when you consider the number of television programs that air every year. You know, I mean, thousands of TV shows have been on the air since the 1950s. When you consider the thousands of television programs that have graced the airwaves and all the different channels, there are not a lot of them, relatively speaking, that you mention them and people immediately, they kind of get that like faraway look like, oh, that was the best show. And where it's not just a show that they liked and it's not just a show they watched and it's not just something that amused them. It's a show that obviously affected them. It touched them in some way. It resonated with them. You know, like you'll talk to people about My So-Called Life. You go, oh, My So-Called Life. And they go, oh, My So-Called Life. Let me tell you about it. You know, and it's like they immediately are taken to this other place. Or you'll mention 30-something. You go, oh, 30-something. They go, oh, 30-something. Let me just tell you about it. But Roseanne is that way. You mention the Roseanne show to people. And I know a lot of people, you mention the Roseanne show, and they'll go, Roseanne, I loved that. And it clearly is in a way beyond the fact that it was like a chuckle fest. It is a show that obviously spoke to them and that they felt Because if you remember when Roseanne went on, she very, in a sort of, in a polite way, but in a very direct way, she said, like, this is not going to be like the Huxtables. And I think she actually mentioned the Huxtables by name. She's like, this is not going to be the Cosby Show.
Yeah.
Because the Cosby Show, this is a whole other kettle of fish, but the Cosby Show got wrapped for presenting an unrealistic depiction of America in general, not just of black America, but of Americans. And Roseanne said that her whole thing was trying to make, you know, she wanted to make it a little bit more, she wanted to show families like her own on television. And I know a lot of people who watch Roseanne, and even if they themselves were not trashy or lower working class, lower middle class or blue collar or whatever, I know a lot of people who watch Roseanne and they felt like that it was just so great to watch a show where there didn't seem to be this brittle, upwardly mobile facade put on everything.
Yeah.
That the show felt like you could breathe while watching it because it did seem like you were watching real people. And, you know, so it's like
John Goodman, who was the father that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of the audience always wanted to have, this big, strong guy who also had a great sense of humor and a great heart, but knew how to take care of his family. You had Roseanne, who was this loudmouth woman that wasn't going to take crap from anybody and the only woman that could kind of keep Dan in line.
Yeah.
You know, and you had like the two sisters that were constantly warring with one another. You had the son that was just really kind of weird and creepy. And you never really kind of knew. And then, I mean, it was very much like an actual family, to the point where I always thought that she and Laurie Metcalf were, you know, actually related in some way.
The thing about the Connors, too, about Dan and Roseanne, and am I making this up in my head, or do they not use last names for, like, the first 4 or 5 years? I think they deliberately didn't use the last name of the family for the first few seasons because she said they wanted it to be relatable to everyone. And so they didn't. I think there was some, it was like Maggie's first words on The Simpsons. I think for the longest time they didn't identify them as being the Connors. Anyway. The thing about Roseanne and Dan, though, is that it's not like they weren't like your parents, you know, at least I viewed it this way. They weren't like your parents, but they were like a slightly better version. In other words, they were a type of parent you wish you had, because that's what sitcoms always are, right? It's the family you wish you had. But it was a family that you wish you had that seemed like might almost be realistically yours.
It was a lot more attainable.
I mean, it's like, you know, we've talked about the Brady Bunch in the show and how in some ways the Brady Bunch kind of gets a bad rap because you look back on it now, and Seamus was the one who pointed this out. He said, you know, it's amazing if you watch the Brady Bunch and it's a dad who wasn't an idiot. He wasn't a boob. He wasn't a bumbler. He wasn't the butt of everybody's jokes. He was respected and loved by his wife, you know, and he was a caring, kind, intelligent man, and and that's why we obviously all gravitated to that show, because both parents, you know, it wasn't just like, I think, like it is so often, where one parent is great, but one parent is just a retard. Both parents were desirable. The thing with Roseanne, though, it's both parents that you would want and that you didn't have to squint too hard to make your own.
Yeah.
They were close enough probably to your own family, or to mine at least, that you could see, like, if you had just been one bassinet over in the delivery room, like, you might have ended up with them. You know, nobody
Absolutely.
Ends up with the Huxtables. You might end up with Roseanne and Dan Connor.
You know, and they seem like, if not your family, then a family that you could very easily see living next to and being friends with. And you knew that, you know, they, as much trouble and drama as they would generate, at the end of the day, they always had each other's backs. And, you know, because he seemed so dysfunctional, gave them almost a power in and of itself.
And then as a couple, too, they were genuinely affectionate, but they also, you know, ribbed each other in a way that you didn't see couples do much on TV. There's long been the dynamic, going back to the Honeymooners, of the wife who would say terrible things to the husband, and the husband would get kind of blustery about it. But in their case, it was genuinely just sort of sarcasm and ribbing that they both knew was humor. And so she would say something snotty to Dan, and Dad would just kind of roll his eyes or play off of it. He also came back with wisecracks and, you know, and insulted her occasionally, too. And then she would laugh. And you still don't really see that a lot rather than just what seems like genuine affectionate humor, there's jokes.
Well, there's
and sometimes jokes and often quite mean-spirited jokes.
Jokes and then like a ladling on of a cloying artificial romance on top of it. And there's the difference between romance and affection, which they really genuinely had. And I say genuinely, I don't know what their relationship was off the set. But I mean, they genuinely had chemistry on camera together. And that is the thing that's, I mean, and it is, you know, and there was, again, to put it up, it's unfair to compare it to The Cosby Show, I suppose. But The Cosby Show, you know, that The Cosby Show lived in this weird, The Cosby Show lived in this weird ultra PC bubble too, in some ways, and I'll say for the obvious reasons. I remember there was this Halloween episode of The Cosby Show, and The New Yorker did this whole article about, you know, it's like a week with television's favorite family or something, and they were getting ready to do The Cosby Show Halloween episode one year, and there was all of this debate about what costumes the kids were allowed to be dressed up as. And at one point, like, one of the daughters was going to dress up as, like, a witch, and somebody else was going to be, like, Captain Hook or whatever. And both of those things got taken out because they felt like the witch was a demeaning stereotype to women, and having somebody as Captain Hook, you know, as a pirate, that was, of course, demeaning to handicapped people. And so, literally, it's like the witch ended up being, like, an African princess, and, like, the pirate guy ended up being, you know, and it was something else. It was just... The show was put together by this committee that made sure that there were no teeth left in anything whatsoever. And in their efforts to make it accessible to everybody, and in their efforts to make sure that it wasn't exclusionary to anybody, the show ended up being exclusionary to, like, everyone, because it felt false. It didn't feel like any real family anywhere. Whereas Roseanne, where, you know, it could be argued, I think, and it was argued at the time, that show was demeaning, you know, to families, or that it ridiculed the idea of the family unit, and that Roseanne herself was, you know, that she was the butt of jokes, and it presented this trashy, you know, woman as a mother, and what are we saying about women, and, you know, what are we saying about respect to parents? And it really was, when you think about it, in the best possible way, it was an inclusive, I don't even want to say PC because that's such a loaded term, but it was an inclusive show because it, you know, because they were true equals. I mean, Roseanne and Dan were absolutely equals. And so often on television, equality takes the form of one of the parents being an idiot, you know.
Well, I mean, obviously she played the power role of the mom that would just, like, sort of scream in every way, kind of get her way, but also didn't shy away from showing that by being that much of an overbearing kind of character would lead to fault at a lot of times. And so she subsequently had to begrudgingly, you know, let the power be led over to Dan from time to time. And Dan would just kind of let back and be like, you know, I could sit here and fight you on this, but I know I'm not going to win, so I'm going to step back and let you fail. And then at the same time, you know, be able to forgive you and let you back in.
I should say this is really apropos of nothing, but one of the, and I don't know that I have this on tape anywhere. I might. But one of the interesting things that happened early in my talk radio career, I guess it would have been 95 or so, I was doing a talk show in Salt Lake City, and she was either, I don't know, she was either born in Salt Lake City, or she grew up, or she lived part of her life there, but she spent a lot of time in Utah growing up, and I think she still had some family there. But Roseanne called my show one time and did not identify herself as being Roseanne, and because I'm an idiot, it was just like when we had Paul and Storm in the studio, and I didn't recognize that they were the enormous penis guys. Roseanne called my show one time, and it was so great because she called up to talk about eating head cheese, because there's this place in Utah called Bill and Nada's, and Bill and Nada's is this diner where they sell a lot of, you know, country folk style food. I think it would be like a place on the East Coast serving a lot of scrapple. And at Bill and Nada's, you go and you get, like, cow brains, or they'll serve you tongue, or they'll serve you head cheese. And we were talking about Bill and Nada's one time, and talking about, you know, well, you know, some whole discussion about the weird sort of, you know, the weird sort of, like, Southern style kind of trashy food they have there. And we answer the phone, and there's this woman who, you know, she calls in, and she's like, well, you know, she's like, the thing that nobody's talking about the menu at Bill and Nada's, nobody's talking about their head cheese. She's like, you got to get that sliced really thin, and, you know, you put it on toast, and it's like, that is really some good eating. And I mean, I've had the cow brains, but the head cheese is where it's at. And we said, oh, that's really good. Are you from here, or is it a recent discovery? You know, how did you discover it? Goes, and there was this pause, and the woman on the other end goes, well, you know, I get back here, you know, every now and again, but I'm stuck in L.A. a lot, you know. But it's like, I like to get back here. And she's like, I got to go. And she hung up, and we went, oh, that's interesting. And, like, immediately, like, the next 70 calls are, like, you know, people were just, like, after the phone, people are going, you idiot. It's like, that was, like, that. I guess she was in town to promote something or to do something or other, like, maybe in Park City. And everybody called up, and they were just, like, was like, that was Roseanne. They were like, we just saw her on State Street the other day. She's in Salt Lake City this week.
That's crazy.
In a weird way, and I know that it's totally an anecdotal thing, but that was in, like, 95, 96. And I always thought it was really great that she actually... She felt so strongly about head cheese that she wanted to call up and actually make an observation about it. And at no point did she tell the call screener who she was.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I know that disproportionately colors my view of her. But the idea that underneath, like, all of the crazy and all of the power tripping and all of the whatever, that she really was this thing. She was this lower class white trash woman who, you know, ended up being smarter than most of the folks around her, and was more ambitious than most of the folks around her, and was and I think still is, so deeply unhappy and unsatisfied with who she is that she just keeps trying to carve it away through plastic surgery and spend it away and trying to act it away by making the Connors into something they weren't in the last few years of that show. And it's just none of it seems to have worked. And none of the things that she tried ever helped her embrace like who she clearly was inside, which is why, you know, so I hate to end on like a big downer. I'm just saying it really is. It is unfortunate that none of that stuff worked. The good news, of course, is that we still have, you know, all of the stuff that she produced, at least certainly in the early years of her career, trying to do that.
Well, I think that that her life in and of itself is almost a caricature of her show and of life in general, which is, you know, it doesn't always end when it's your career doesn't always end the way it would on a TV show or right. In a movie. It doesn't end in an hour and a half or 30 minutes with everything kind of tied together with a nice big bow. Sometimes you just kind of go off the rails and can only really appreciate the good when you have it, and you know, kind of hold on to those positive moments, because at the end it's really all you're going to have, you know, to sort of take with you. And you know, you do go a little bit crazy a lot of times.
It's worth going back and watching, by the way, her first couple appearances on The Tonight Show, because Johnny Carson clearly loved her.
Yeah.
And it was always great to see Carson tickled by somebody when he just really, really was found somebody truly funny or charming, and he certainly did with her. So those are on YouTube. You can actually go watch those.
Just real quick, everybody talks about the shows that Chuck Lorre was a part of that were obviously pretty famous. Some other ones that of note should be The Littles, Mask, Muppet Babies. Let's see here. The Toxic Crusaders, My Two Dads, Beanie and Cecil.
Beanie and Cecil?
Oh,
yep.
No, the remake of Beanie and Cecil, which was actually quite terrific.
Back in 1988.
My Two Dads.
There's Charles in Charge. So quite a few kid shows in there as well.
As a Jedi.
So,
All right. On that note, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of Humor Me Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Find him online at bigjimwillig.com. That is BigJimWillig, bigjimwillig.com. And are you going to be... You doing anything? You doing the jokes
tomorrow? If you're in the Mount Angel area, please come on out to Bierhaus and check me out. I'll be co-featuring with Cody Cooper. Headliner would be Andre Paradise. It'd be a fantastic evening of funny and beer. So that's come on out.
And if Bierhaus is the place that I'm thinking of, because they've changed their name a couple times, if Bierhaus is the place I'm thinking of, they sell the most amazing hamburger there. You can buy a hamburger that is in fact made of sausage. So they take spiced sausage, they grind it up, and then they make it into a hamburger patty, and then they cook it, and they serve it to you, and they have the, and then they make their own mustard, and it really is just, seriously, some of the best food that I've ever had in Oregon is in Mount Angel. Mount Angel is it's a town of like 5 people, and it's like everything there is like in the weird like scripty Bavarian font, because the whole town seems to exist sort of for their Oktoberfest thing. But there really is some great food to be had in Mount Angel. So if you get a chance, go check out the Mount Angel Abbey and Church, which are beautiful, which are really, really astoundingly beautiful.
So come to the beer house, come for the food, stay for the funny.
Exactly. BigJimWillig.com is where you find him online. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hello. In the realm of comedy, by the way, I dropped a song in the Dropbox for you. I don't know if you'll be able to pull
that in time. Is it
amusing? It is amusing. Steve Martin has his second bluegrass album has just been released with a group called the Steep Mountain Rangers. And he was on Craig Ferguson last night and did a song called Atheists Don't Have a Song. And it was really terrific. But his new album is very, very good. He has actually also... does a song with Paul McCartney, and he does one with the Dixie Chicks on the album. It's very, very good. Well,
I'll play that into the end of the show here.
Yes, that was my hope.
As we wrap, we'll do that. All right. On that note, we should probably bring the curtain down on this. So let's see. What was I going to say? So Big Jim Willig can be found at bigjimwillig.com, and you can find out about the show that's happening about Angel, and then, of course, stuff coming up in the future as well. Let's see. Join us Monday, where I guess we'll include Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian music editor, Ryan White. By the way, he is also going to be there tonight at the Portland Art Museum. That is happening at 7 o'clock tonight at the Portland Art Museum. Objectivity, a live game show put on by our friend Mark Aceto. Peter Carlin, Ryan White, Chelsea Kane, Courtney Hameister, myself. And then as Peter Carlin refers to him in his post, Peter's so great. Peter actually says, come to Objectivity. He said it'll be me, Peter Carlin, Ryan White, Chelsea Kane, Courtney Hameister, current mayor, and Mark Aceto. So there you go. All right. Whatnot. So with that, we say thank you for listening. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. And they'll be playing those two shows back-to-back, along with some other things on the stream throughout the weekend. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you, and continue to spread the word. That never goes unappreciated. It is Friday, April 22nd, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening. Be safe. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You know, religious people have such beautiful music and art, and atheists really have nothing. Until now. Little tune called Atheists Don't Have No Songs.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Habaneguilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Romantics play
Clair de Lune.
Clair de Lune.
Born again, sing he is risen. But no one ever wrote a tune. For godless existentialism.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Some folks sing
a baccantata.
Baccantata.
Lutherans get Christmas trees. Atheist songs add up to nada.
Up to nada.
But they do have Sundays free.
Pentecostals sing to heaven.
Coptics had the Book of Scrolls.
Numerologists count to seven.
Atheists have rock and roll.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Atheists
don't have no songs.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Habaneguilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Catholics
dress up for mass
and listen to
Gregorian chants.
Atheists
just take a pass.
Watch football in their underpants.
Atheists
don't have no songs.
Don't have no songs.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
sweet silver angels over the sea. Please come down flying low for me. One time I trusted a stranger, 'cause I heard a sweet song, and it was gently enticing me. There was some